This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. Good afternoon, universe. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Day two coverage of the 2019 NHL Draft, rounds 2 through 7. We'll be with you for the majority of this afternoon, bringing you all the latest Winnipeg Jets news, all the latest trades and activity from the NHL Draft in Vancouver. We want you to join in on the conversation. You can do so via Twitter. Send your tweets to @IllegalCurve. You can also send us your text messages. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply.
We have a trade to announce.
There you go. Ezra doing his best Gary Bettman impression. We do have a couple of trades to announce. They have both been consummated within the last hour. One of the two trades in particular is of interest to the Winnipeg Jets, as it involves a Central Division rival, that being the Nashville Predators. If you haven't seen it yet, hang on tight. The Nashville Predators have traded defenseman P.K. Subban to the New Jersey Devils in exchange for defenseman Steven Santini, in exchange for Jeremy Davies, he's also a defenseman, as well as a 2019 second-round pick. That'll be coming up in about probably 30 minutes' time. That'll be pick number 34, and a 2020 second-round pick. Again, the headliner there, P.K. Subban from the Nashville Predators going to the New Jersey Devils, where Jets fans will see P.K. Subban only once per season, barring, of course, a Stanley Cup final meeting.
Well, and the Jets are going to see the Devils very early in the season.
Well, in New Jersey, and yep. Then we don't know, of course, when New Jersey will be visiting here. But Subban to the New Jersey Devils is the headline blockbuster deal early on this morning and this afternoon here on the day two coverage of the NHL draft. We'll get into that trade in a second. The other trade that took place within the last hour involves the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Carolina Hurricanes. It's strictly a salary dump. The Carolina Hurricanes acquire from the Toronto Maple Leafs Patrick Marleau, and for doing so, they also get a 2020 conditional first-round pick, the condition of that pick being that if it's in the top 10, it'll go to 2021. But the Hurricanes acquire a first-round pick and Patrick Marleau from the Toronto Maple Leafs in exchange for a 2020 sixth-round pick. So two trades to kick off day two coverage of the NHL draft here on TSN Radio 1290. Ezra, let's start, of course, with the Predators trade, the trade of Subban to the Devils for P.K. Subban. From my perspective, I know Subban is making a lot of money. $9 million is his cap hit. He had a down year last year in Nashville. But from a Devils perspective, I like this trade on their back end.
Yeah, and obviously we knew that P.K. Subban was in play here. And at no point, guys, did I think that he was going to the Toronto Maple Leafs. Just doesn't make any sense. They don't have the cap space, right?
Yeah.
We know that Mitch Marner is going to get a big contract. We know that they're going to sign Kapanen if they haven't already. And when you're talking about the Devils, I mean, we knew they had the cap room, and I agree with you. I mean, P.K. Subban, he's making $9 million around there, and we know that Roman Josi is in the last year of his contract, and we know that the Predators are going to go big game hunting, right? Looking at Matt Duchene, right? So there's a good chance that the Predators are going to use some of this room for Matt Duchene. Obviously, they could sign some other players, but you know, the Predators, I think, have $13 million. Producer Chris Curry was crunching some numbers. I believe they have $13 million now.
He's crunching numbers. He's crushing slices of pizza. Chris Curry doing a great job.
We've got lots of
board.
We're going to be on the air for 5 hours, boys.
Yeah.
I mean, we need to have our Timbits and our pizza here. We've got some cookies as well, but when you're talking about the Predators, I mean,
by 4 o'clock we'll have diabetes. It's all good.
Exactly. When you're talking about the Preds, I mean, very similar to the Jets guys, in that we knew that there was some movement coming after a very disappointing first-round loss, right? I mean, we knew that the Predators, I mean, you look at a guy like Victor Arvidsson, he had no points in six games. Ryan Johansson, Philip Forsberg, he didn't have an excellent first round. So we knew that moves were coming, right? So you got to love this move if you're a Devils fan, and I happen to be a Devils fan. But when you're the Predators, I mean, I wouldn't look at this and say, okay, well, this looks like a lopsided trade here, because the cap relief is the big thing. Roman Josi is going to get a big bump in salary on his next contract. Mm-hmm. And you know that the Predators covet Matt Duchene. And we know that Kyle Turris is another guy that David Poile is trying to move with that contract, Drew. I don't know how easy that's going to be, but absolutely. excellent deal for the Devils. And I got to say, before we get into the Marlowe trade, you know, just great for us here that we've got two big trades to talk about, because yesterday, guys, with the exception of the Flyers-Arizona trade, where the Flyers moved down three spots and then got that second-round pick, I think it was 42nd overall, there were no trades.
Well, that seems to be the new normal here in the NHL draft, is that the first round, where everyone's expecting there to be a lot of activity, there doesn't seem to be any. I don't know if it's because the general managers are too busy, too focused on making the draft picks, or there's not a big difference between, say, pick number 10 and pick number 17, and as a result, there's no reason to move around. But whatever it is, it seems like the day two is where a lot of the moves begin to happen. That's what we saw last year, of course, with the Dougie Hamilton trade with Carolina and Calgary, and it started off with a bang earlier today with PK Subban heading to New Jersey, Dave.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Drew. I think you're 100% right. And I also think the fact that the cap is not 100% determined yet and hasn't been set out, which I agree with you. Drew's already shaking his head. No, it's insane.
Like, how hard is it to say that the salary cap is $82 million versus $81.5 million?
But the worst part about it is,
like,
how
is that extra $500,000 that difficult to figure out?
How do you expect general managers to conduct business?
No, it makes no sense. How do you make informed decisions on your roster when you specifically, like, it's actually embarrassing. Like, the NHL is a billion-dollar corporation, enterprise, whatever you want to reference it as, and the fact that they can't have such a critical piece of information for the GMs in advance of this weekend. Like, there's no excuse. There's no, like, there shouldn't be any sort of, question mark. This should be a known quantity in advance of the draft, so you can have trades made with certainty. I mean, why would you as a GM? Now, of course, we're not talking about a huge disparity. I mean, it's, you know, it originally was thought it was going to be 83. Now they're talking 81.5 to 82. But the fact of the matter is, how can you as an organization have your guys go into this without the most information possible to be able to determine how their roster is going to look? Because there are teams that are right up against that cap.
Sure. Well, you know, talking about Patrick Marlowe, boys, I mean, that extra $500,000 for teams like the Leafs, for teams like the Jets, the Predators, teams that are up against the salary cap.
Makes a huge difference.
Well, the Predators aren't now, but they will be if they sign a guy like Matt Duchene. But, I mean, if you're the Leafs, I mean, you might need that extra $500,000 for a guy like Mitch Marner.
It's embarrassing.
Right?
It's a black mark on the NHL. It makes them look like amateur hour to not be able to have this sort of the business side of sports locked up and ready to go, so teams can begin to make their moves.
I understand the rationale. I understand that as a league now, it's not going to be make teams like the Jets or the Leafs that are up against it happy. But it sounds from what I've been reading is that they're going to tighten their belts for the next couple of years, wait for the new TV deal to come out, and then at that point they're going to reward the league by bumping up the salary.
Let's talk about the Marlowe trade. So that is the second trade that happened earlier this morning. It actually happened before the Subban trade, but Subban gets the headlines. Patrick Marlowe, a guy that we know has fallen out of favor in Toronto, a guy who certainly didn't want to be in Toronto anymore.
Well, I think that all has to do with how much money he's making.
Right. Yeah,
he had a good season.
They signed him to too much money when they signed him, or to 1 year too many.
Well, that was it. Remember when Marlowe signed with the Leafs? Yeah. I remember we were doing the free agency show, and we said that, you know, maybe giving Marlowe that extra year is going to come back to bite the Leafs. And obviously, you know, Marlowe's time with the Leafs, I mean, it's a little bit mixed because the Leafs never got out of the first round, right? So, I mean, you were signing Marlowe to kind of push you over the edge, give you that veteran player to go on a nice, long, deep Stanley Cup run. Obviously, the Boston Bruins, you know, had other plans. But I should just mention here, Drew, Bob McKenzie tweeted this out about 12 minutes ago.
You're going to say the JT Miller trade?
No.
Oh, okay. So,
that must have just happened.
Okay, yeah, that's where I thought you were going to go.
I didn't have that one, Drew.
Bob McKenzie is reporting that JT Miller is going to be traded from Tampa Bay to Vancouver.
Okay.
It's not official yet. So when it's official, we'll bring that one to you. That's where you were going.
No, Drew, you've obviously got your Twitter more refreshed than I do here. But when you're talking about the Leafs here, Pierre LeBrun, of course, he mentions that Carolina is going to try to get him, Marlowe, that is. They're going to try to convince him to stay, but Pierre LeBrun says, if not, they will buy him out, and then he's going to become a UFA. And the belief is, Bob McKenzie talked about this yesterday up on TSN.ca, Marlowe would sign a team-friendly contract with San Jose, somewhere in the neighborhood of, I imagine, $2 million, $3 million, like that.
His family moved back to San Jose. Yeah. He still owns a house in San Jose.
Well, and then the idea is that you keep the band together, right? Joe Thornton stays. Joe Pavelski stays. We obviously know Erik Karlsson has already signed his deal.
Yeah.
And then Pierre LeBrun also reporting, Bob McKenzie, that is reporting that it looks like Kasperi Kapanen and the Leafs are about to announce a deal that's going to pay him in the neighborhood of $3.2 million a year.
There's a lot happening early on Saturday afternoon here on TSN Radio 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, day two coverage of the NHL draft. The picks are going to set to get underway in the next 5 or so minutes.
Well, Kapanen, sorry to cut you off, Drew. That Kapanen contract is going to be 3 years, it looks like.
Okay, well, when that's official, we'll obviously bring you that news. But let's look back to last night and the Winnipeg Jets. They made their first round selection at number 20 overall, picking Finnish defenseman Ville Heinola. This is a young player, obviously, given that his first year eligible to be drafted. He played in the Finnish Elite League last season. And there's a lot of similarities based on what you hear. Smarts, hockey sense, good first pass. You know, left side defenseman who can actually play both sides, as he played a lot on the right side last season in the Finnish Elite League. Boy, does this to me sound like a guy who's almost the Finnish clone of Josh Morrissey.
Yeah, and, you know, also kind of similar to Sami Niku, not just the fact that they're both from Finland guys, but a guy that can play on the right side, because we know that Sami Niku prefers to play on the right side, right? Dave, you can speak to that with Niku's time with the Moose, right? But, you know, Ville Heinola, he was on, I have to give myself a plug, when I had my article up on illegalcurve.com, I had him as, you know, one of the seven guys that I thought the Jets could take. And obviously, you know, there's a bit of luck involved there because, Drew, you could have easily had 15 guys in that article. And when you're talking about a guy like Arthur Kaliev, I don't think anybody saw Arthur Kaliev slipping to the second round. But back to Ville Heinola, I mean, the guy obviously has a winning pedigree. Part of Team Finland, recently won the gold at the 2019 World Junior Hockey Championship. A guy that's obviously been a big part of the Finnish junior program. And a guy that might play another year in the Finnish league. I wouldn't expect him to step right into the NHL, obviously, or the AHL, I don't think really is an option for him either, but definitely a guy that can move the puck. And when you talk about hockey IQ, and I was watching a little film on Heinola when I was putting together my article, and just a guy that looks like he has incredible vision, and a guy that looks like he can play in all types of different situations, and a guy, we mentioned the World Juniors, but he was on the top pair of that team. So it's not like Ville Heinola was some, you know, just, you know, kind of spare part on Team Finland. This is a guy that was playing big minutes on the team that won gold. So it's looking like, you know, the Jets have a really good D prospect there.
Yeah, and, you know, our shout out, first of all, to Jamie Thomas from Jets TV giving us the proper pronunciation.
Yes.
Heinola. So we're, you know, sometimes, especially with the Finnish players, you get a little bit concerned. And most likely we're still butchering the pronunciation regardless of...
It'll change until Billy's happy with however we're saying it.
Exactly. But, you know, it's interesting. I mean, he had a good meeting with the Jets at the NHL Combine. He spoke about that after he was selected by Winnipeg. And, yeah, as he's right, this is a smart player. He's not a big guy. He's about 5'11", mm-hmm. 6 yep. feet in that range, 180 pounds. So he's not, you know, a big guy. Got crushed by Max Comtois in that tournament. Remember, up against the boards, took him out for the rest of that tournament. But he's a good young player. He's really smart. As Drew said, he's versatile. And it sounds like that's what the Finnish teams like to do with these younger defensive prospects, is that they have them playing a lot of times on both sides. So he has that versatility to kind of go on either the right or the left, but he is a left-shooting defenseman. So he's, you know what, he's going to add to the stable of young defensive core that's coming up through the system.
Yeah, and Drew, you know, just quickly here, I know you want to get to a few other things here after Heinola, but...
Ezzy, we got 4.5+ hours. Take your time, buddy.
But when you're talking... Yeah, exactly. When you're talking about Heinola, I mean, you know, the team that he plays for in SM Liiga in Finland, that's the top league in Finland. You know, he had 2 goals, 14 points
yeah.
in 34 games. Luko is the team that he played for, and he right. might play for next
he's
year
because
he's got 1 year left on his contract. I mean, scoring 14 points, guys, as a defenseman in 34 games, yeah. that's not an easy feat. So,
especially against men. You're 17
exactly.
years old.
And he's not a big player, so it's yeah. even tougher for a guy who's, you know, only, you know, 170, 175 pounds, whatever it is, right, Dave? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Heinola is a guy, if you look at the rankings, I mean, Heinola was a guy that was supposed to go right around 20, right? He was projected to kind of go 16 to 24.
Yeah. HockeyProspect.com, which is the guide that I've been using for yep. the most part, had him ranked at number 16 overall in their prospects. So, I mean, is it a steal getting him at 20? Well, I don't think I would go that far, but it's certainly a guy that...
It's not a reach.
It's not a reach.
I mean, when you're talking about some of the other guys, and I realize that, you know, late in the first round there, you know, a lot of people were getting on some of the picks, you know, with a guy like Arthur Kaliev, a 50-goal, 102-point guy.
Yeah.
You know, the guy that stands out to me, Lassie Thompson, a lot of people were a little bit surprised that he went right before to the Ottawa Senators. You know, Braden Tracy, a guy that had a really good season with the Moose Jaw Warriors. A lot of people thought he would slip to the second round. Cal Foote is another guy that went to Tampa. A lot of people thought he might slip to the second round. But it's really, you got to take the rankings. We always remind people.
Nolan Foote. Cal was his brother that had previously been taken by the Lightning.
Yeah, forgive me. One of Adam Foote's two big kids.
I was going to say. They're both on the Lightning now.
One of the 2 feet.
Yeah, exactly.
Clever, Dave. That's well done.
Tampa Bay is 2 feet now.
Well, the big shocker, sort of the one that drew the biggest gasp out of the crowd in Vancouver, came off the voice of Steve Yzerman taking defenseman Moritz Seider out of Germany, Mannheim, the highest-ranked German player to be selected since Leon Draisaitl went to the Edmonton Oilers.
Who we talked to Greg Button about last week, I believe, right?
Seider, yes. Yeah. Nobody had him going, top six. This is a player that most people had in the teens again.
In the teens, yeah. He was a 15, 16 kind of guy.
That was the first big wow moment of the 2019 first round of the NHL draft.
And that, to me, is the best part about the whole of the draft, is that you're sitting there, and when you have a team, I mean, someone asked Steve Yzerman whether he was throwing a curveball. He didn't appreciate that. You could see that on his response. But the idea is, it does, in the sense that in the people's drafts, that obviously wasn't anticipated, so it changes the order a little bit,
right?
Which is exciting,
right? And we asked Craig Button last Saturday, Moritz Seider, a German defenseman. He called him a Brandon Carlo clone, and I actually included him, Dave, in the article for IllegalCurve.com. That's cheap plug number two there.
Yeah, it wasn't even done by me.
We thought that Seider might be an option for the Jets at 20. The other guy I wanted to mention, Ryan Johnson, son of Craig Johnson, he went with the last pick of the first round, 31st overall, which was acquired in the Ryan O'Reilly trade, if you remember. And Ryan Johnson was a guy that, if you look at the consensus rankings, I believe he was somewhere around 50, if I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, he was supposed to be kind of a mid-second rounder. So a guy like Ryan Johnson also was a guy. John Beecher is another. But again, it goes back, if a team's amateur scouting staff likes a player, they don't care where he's ranked, by future considerations or hockey prospect or any of these other services.
They have their board, and that's why they go about it. And I think I think the biggest surprise about Seider is that, and this was mentioned last night, is that, if you're going to select him, why don't you try and trade down for him? Maybe there's somebody who wants to pay a bit of a premium to move up and select somebody at six that they didn't think was going to be there, because Seider likely would have been there at 8 or 10. But I think that's what you're seeing in that first round of the NHL draft. With the exception of the trade between Philadelphia and Arizona, teams are just so sort of risk averse about trading down or trading up, because it's almost a dog's breakfast after the top three picks in terms of the tiers of the elite players last night.
Yeah, and I think in this instance it's probably an accurate statement, Drew, in that they could have probably traded down into the 10 spot, move up. The Wings were originally drafting.
They were sixth.
They were sixth, right?
Yeah,
and then they took
the Wings.
Yeah.
The Wings took Seider.
Sorry, they took Seider. But I mean, what I'm saying is that you could have taken Seider if you would have taken, Ottawa's pick, or you would have had an option, I think. Like, if you would have gone with the low.
And we don't know. Maybe they tried to trade down. I mean, it's certainly a possibility that they tried to trade down, but we don't know that at all. Arthur Kaliev, who's been talked about a lot as a guy that's surprising, has slipped into the second round. He just got selected. The second pick of the second round, Arthur Kaliev, went to the Los Angeles Kings at number 33 overall. So the picks are starting. The second round is underway. It's going to be fast and furious.
We'll have to talk to Josh Cooper about that pick.
Exactly. Rounds 2 through 7. Josh Cooper will join us later on in the broadcast this afternoon. But it's going to be fast and furious over the next 4-plus hours. The Jets 51. Drafting 51st overall, so they're 19 or so picks away. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to try and hook up with Mike McIntyre. He's in Vancouver. You're going to hear from the Jets draft picks this afternoon. Lots to come. It's a busy day. Stick with us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Day 2 coverage of the 2019 NHL Draft live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Saturday afternoon, welcome back to TSN 1290's coverage of day 2 of the 2019 NHL Draft. We are the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you this afternoon as the draft picks are coming in fast and furious. The Winnipeg Jets about 15 picks away from making their second round pick. We're now joined from Vancouver at the NHL Draft by Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press. Mike, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, guys. Yeah, the draft picks are coming in fast and furious, and the trades are happening. I think the dam has broken after a bit of a stalemate yesterday. Only the one move, and it was just a swap of some picks. But already Patrick Marleau, PK Subban, and now it looks like JT Miller. They haven't announced that one here in Vancouver. I suspect the Vancouver crowd here at Rogers Arena is going to go crazy when they announce the apparent JT Miller trade. But yeah, lots of activity, lots of talk, and could be a busy day ahead here with obviously six rounds of the draft. The Jets with four picks of their own as it currently stands, but I would put that down in pencil, not in ink right now.
Absolutely. It is looking like a chaotic start to the afternoon, which is great for us and great for those of us who need to fill content and fill ink on newspaper pages. Mike, we obviously want to talk about the Jets' first-round pick last night. Ville Heinola, they get the left-side, right-side defenseman from Finland. He can play both sides. You know, smart player, good first pass, probably needs to improve his skating a little bit. But, boy, he does sound to some extent like a bit of a Josh Morrissey clone.
Yeah, it really does. And, I think there was maybe a bit of a misconception, and I put myself in that camp, but thought the Jets might be looking for some help up the middle. And there were a number of fairly high-rated centermen that were available when the Jets, when their number was called last night to make that 20th selection. A few different names out there that maybe some thought the Jets might go, but of course, in the end, it was a defenseman. With some real versatility and another Finnish connection to this team that is really stockpiling the Finnish prospects, not just Patrick Laine, of course, Sami Niku, Christian Vesalainen, and now this young man. And don't forget, the Jets recently signed another player, Jono Luoto, out of Finland a couple weeks back. So that's five Finnish players in the system, and perhaps we'll add another one or two here before the day is done.
You know, Mike, are you expecting it to be more of a quiet day for the Jets? I mean, we know that the Jets have four draft picks and obviously, you know, the second round pick at 51st overall. Do you get any sense that maybe the Jets might move up in the second round if there's a player? I mean, a guy like Raphael Lavoie, who is ranked 19th by Bob McKenzie, he's still available, and we're at pick 37 right now. Carolina's got the 37th pick. Do you have any idea if the Jets might move up or make other moves, or are you just expecting them to make the picks that they currently hold?
No, I think there'll be some movement, and it could even mean moving down, guys. We've seen that a little bit here, especially if you see maybe a player that you like and you know he's still going to be there. The Jets have the four picks. I'm sure they'd love to come away with more than just four prospects today to add to the one they picked yesterday. So maybe we see a situation where they like a guy and they think he's going to be available. If they move down some spots and they land themselves an extra pick. I also am curious to see what happens with, an Eric Comrie, a player who you wonder, could they move him here at the draft? I think we've talked about this in the past. I'm not sure there's really room anymore for Eric Comrie in the Jets pipeline. He would have to go through waivers this fall to be sent down to the Moose. We know he's not making the Jets. They got Lauren Brossois on another deal, of course, so he's cemented as the backup. They also have Mikael Burden, who's, I think, ready to take on a bigger role with the Moose and the number one job. So would they flip an Eric Comrie today for a draft pick? What about some salary shedding? And we've talked about Matthew Perreault as one player. There were, in fact, some rumors that the Jets maybe had some offers to move Perreault earlier in the week as part of the Jacob Trouba deal. They opted not to do that to get the return that they did. But, you know, could we see a guy like Matthew Perreault go today? Obviously, you know, we're seeing some salary shedding, right? PK Subban looks like a pure salary dump from the Predators. Patrick Marleau, certainly a salary dump by the Leafs to clear space. Well, the Jets need to do some of that as well. And maybe that will pave the way for some additional action at the draft table today.
So, you know, Mike, we haven't heard from Jets coach Paul Maurice in about 2 months. And yesterday he gave about 2 months worth of answers in a 25-minute interview with you guys down in Vancouver. What part of that interview stood out for you? What part of his comments maybe really kind of caught your attention?
Well, he sort of doubled down to me on maybe some of the stubbornness that I think drives some people crazy. You know, they feel that Paul Maurice maybe isn't as flexible as they'd like or willing to adapt or make changes. And you kind of thought maybe after what happened last season, the way it it ended, that maybe there'd be a bit of a humbling going on and maybe, you know, some soul searching and a change of direction. But in all aspects, really, of the game, it looks like Paul Maurice, you know, he used a golfing analogy, which I thought was quite funny. The Jets, of course, were able to hit the golf course a lot earlier than many thought this year. But he said, you know, we've been hitting a lot of drives right down the middle, and yeah, we put one in the water in the playoffs. Well, I don't know how many more mulligans Paul Maurice and company have with this squad, but obviously there's going to be some changes to the actual makeup of the roster. That's already begun to happen. But in terms of the philosophy and the approach, you know, Paul Maurice sort of said that they're going to stick with what they believe has got them to this point. They still think the window is wide open. They still like the core that they have in place. And so if there were fans out there maybe expecting a bit of a mea culpa from Paul Maurice or, you know, changes with the assistants, I know that was something talked about, changes with the leadership group. Sounds like we're not going to see any of that happen, at least not immediately, because Paul Maurice wants to give this group as constructed and as is going to continue to be constructed this summer more of a chance to do what he thinks they can do.
Mike McIntyre is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live with day two coverage of the 2019 NHL Draft. Mike joining us from the arena in Vancouver. The Winnipeg Jets still about another 14 or so picks away from making their second round selection at number 51.
The Ottawa. By the way, guys, has there ever been a Mad that's played in the NHL before? The Ottawa Senators just took a player. His first name is Mads, M-A-D-S, Mads Sogard.
Yeah, you remember Mads Naslund. He used to play for the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah. That's yeah. You know, what's a T versus a D among friends here?
Sure. But yeah, he's going to be the first Mads in history to ever play in the NHL.
Well, I'll tell you who was Mads, and that was people online over the Jacob Trouba return earlier this week when the Jets dealt the defenseman to the New York Rangers for Neil Pionk, and then the first round pick last night, of course, which turned into Ville Heinola. You know, Mike, you know, 5 days removed from that trade, and you know all the talk about the Jets were boxed in, and Kevin Cheveldayoff didn't have very many options. From my perspective, I don't fully understand those arguments, but maybe, you know, from your perspective, you see it in a different way.
Yeah. By the way, I think Andy had mentioned Raphael Lavoie. Well, he's off the board now, guys. He just went to Edmonton with pick number 38. So he will not be available when the Jets pick 13 picks from now. Yeah, I mean, the Trouba situation, guys, obviously, you know, a lot's been said about it, and sure, a lot more will be said in the coming days. You know, one thing I'd say is don't believe everything you hear out there. I know there's all kinds of speculation and rumors about boxing in and, you know, trade demands and or refusing to bargain or negotiate with other teams. I personally don't believe the list was one or two. Yeah, I'm sure maybe Trouba's camp said that, you know, there's certain destinations he would prefer, but I think Kevin Cheveldayoff certainly had some options out there, but for sure, it's not like he could call up the other 30 general managers in the league and get a trade proposal from all of them and then weigh which of the 30 was best. That was never going to be the situation here. And let's face it, whether an extension was worked out ahead of time or not with Trouba, we know that one was not, a bit curious that the Jets maybe wouldn't have allowed the Rangers to negotiate. But regardless, you know, the return was going to be what it was, and obviously any team trading for Trouba, if an extension wasn't worked out ahead of time, is taking on some degree of risk. And you would think the reward would reflect that risk. I suspect Jacob Trouba is probably going to sign long-term with the Rangers, but, you know, nothing is certain. And so I think, you know, the Rangers had to hedge their bets a little bit. People may be expecting a return, hoping to get a Jacob Trouba clone back. They were always going to be disappointed. That was never going to happen. And I think, guys, this trade is almost as much about what the Jets got back as what they get rid of. And when I say that, I don't mean any disrespect to Jacob Trouba. I'm talking about the cap space that Jacob Trouba's departure clears up. That's going to allow the Jets to make some lateral moves that, quite frankly, if Jacob Trouba wanted to sign in Winnipeg, you know, long-term, well, there were going to have to be casualties to make room for him. We know that Neil Pionk is not going to get anywhere near the money Jacob Trouba was. So the Jets can now use that money in other ways to improve their team. And I think that's the bigger picture that it's hard to see right now in the here and now when we all want to, you know, judge the winners and losers of a trade. But I think this is one of those guys where it's going to take some time to sort of look back, sort of see the real value here or not for the Jets.
You know, Mike, just sticking with Jacob Trouba and the New York Rangers, I mean, you're in Vancouver, obviously. You're on the draft floor there, or close to the draft floor, presumably. But what's the chatter about the Rangers? Because, you know, you pick up Kaapo Kakko, second overall. They've now got their top-pairing defenseman in Jacob Trouba. When you look at some of the prospects the Rangers have in the system, guys like Elias Anderson, Vitali Kravtsov, Brett Howden from Oak Bank, Manitoba, I mean, they've got a lot of good young prospects. Now you've got Trouba. I mean, you obviously have a lot of talent there. Mika Zibanejad. I mean, are a lot of people talking about how dangerous the Rangers are going to look, you know, 1 or 2 years from now?
Yeah, I am on the draft floor, guys. I'm actually sitting at the Jets table. You want me to put Chevy on right now?
No, we'd actually like to talk to Zinger, Mike.
Oh, okay. No, I'm not at the draft table. We are on the draft floor in the bleachers here overlooking all the action. Yeah, I mean, and how great is the NHL schedule maker, guys? What a juicy first road trip for the Jets. They get to start off in the Big Apple on Broadway against Jacob Trouba, Brendan Lemieux, Kaapo Kakko, and then the Rangers debut. And then the very next night now, they get to go take on PK Subban and Jack Hughes in Newark. That's going to be, no shortage of great storylines to start off the 2019-20 season. For those of us on the Jets beat, we're already sort of salivating at all those storylines. But yeah, I mean, you know, both the Rangers and the Devils have made significant moves just in these last couple days to get better. I mean, part of that, of course, is that's what happens when you get the number one and two picks. But making moves like Jacob Trouba to the Rangers and now PK Subban to the Devils, you know, I don't want to say you can turn things around really quickly in this league, but I think with the cap and, you know, the parity that we see, you can go from, you know, a bottom dweller to being a contender in relative short order here. And I think we're seeing that. New Jersey and New York, those are two big hockey markets, right, with proud histories. They don't like spoiling. They certainly don't like picking one and two. And so you know that in those markets, the GM's doing everything possible to get them back to where they once were, and that's, you know, at or near the top of the league, and certainly makes for exciting times, because you know that for every team that gets better, well, that's going to come at a cost to somebody else, right? And that's one of the beauties of this game is the way things can fluctuate from year to year.
You know, Mike, here in Winnipeg, it seems like it's been all RFA talk for quite some time. But, you know, the draft seems to bring a lot of positivity with new blood coming into the organization. Obviously, next week, there's going to be a development camp, so you're going to see a lot of the prospects within the system. But which player, if you had to put on your prognostication hat, which players do you think make that jump and become full-time Jets next season?
Well, I think almost in part out of necessity and certainly in part out of talent, but I just don't see the Jets not having both Christian Vesalainen, all three of Christian Vesalainen, Mason Appleton, and Tucker Kuhlman all on the opening night roster. I envision them all being part of the 23-man roster. And Sammy Niku, I didn't mention him because he, of course, ended the year on the roster with the Jets, and I believe he's firmly entrenched. In fact, I'd be surprised if he's not in the top six. Tucker Kuhlman may very well be in the top six as well next year. Obviously, the Jets' defense is very much in flux, but I think up front, Appleton and Vesalainen, not only because of their relatively cheap entry-level contract that gives the Jets, you know, some of the breathing room that they need, but I think there's certainly talent there as well that they're going to work their way into the lineup. And so, you know, and I think there's enough players maybe going to be moved out here, whether it's a Brandon Tanev or, you know, other pieces like that, that there's room for those guys to step in and contribute. So I think we're going to see, in a way, guys, the Jets are almost, hard to believe, almost get younger again next year with some of this infusion of youth coming their way.
Mike McIntyre's in Vancouver. He's at the 2019 NHL Draft. The Winnipeg Jets are less than 10 picks away. Mike, we'll let you get ready for that. Thanks so much for joining us this, I guess, this afternoon here, this morning on the West Coast, and we look forward to doing it again, Mike.
You bet. Enjoy the day, guys.
Take care, Mike. Bye. When we come back, we'll bring you the Jets pick. We got all sorts of other happenings going on. Much more to come. We're with you all afternoon long. You're listening to the 2019 NHL Draft coverage on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Day two of the NHL Draft continues. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, TSN 1290's coverage. The Winnipeg Jets about four or so picks away from their selection in the second round. This segment of the program brought to you by our good friends at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Les Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the whole family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. The trade that we mentioned earlier on in this hour is now official. JT Miller has been traded from the Tampa Bay Lightning to the Vancouver Canucks. Here's the entire deal. Let me pull it up. It is in exchange for goaltender Marek Mazanek, a 2019 third-round pick, and a conditional first-rounder that could become the first-round pick is in 1920. That's right. If the Canucks don't make the playoffs, though, that pick will move to 2021. So again, JT Miller to the Canucks in exchange for a first-round pick, a third-round pick, and goaltender Marek Mazanek.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, JT Miller, this is his third team now, former first-rounder of the Rangers back in 2011, the year that the Jets took Scheifele, and you know, a good pickup for the Canucks. I mean, we know that the Canucks are loaded with good young players.
Isn't that a bit a heavy price to pay for JT Miller? I mean, for a Tampa Bay Lightning team that's, you know, salary cap strapped, I don't love them giving up a first round pick, a third round pick, and a goaltending prospect.
Yeah, and I mean, the goaltending prospect, Mazanek is
he's
a guy
been around for a while.
I mean, this is a journeyman kind of minor league guy, right?
Right.
So, I mean, that's kind of a throw-in. But, yeah, I agree. The first-rounder, and I mean, the first-rounder, there's no guarantee it's going to be a late first-rounder.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
a mid-first-rounder, that's too much, I think. I mean, that is too much to give up for JT Miller, a guy who's not... I mean, he's not a dominant force.
No, he's a good, solid, I would say, kind of second line center, maybe third line center
on a good team.
On the Lightning, he was a third line guy, right?
Even
fourth line.
That's what I'm saying.
On Vancouver, he'll probably, I imagine, play on the second line. But you know, we'll see there. I mean, there's a lot of talk that a guy like Jake Virtanen could be on the move from the Vancouver Canucks. By the way, how many defensemen have been rumored to be going to the Vancouver Canucks, right? Tyson Barrie, because he's from BC. He's a guy who you hear out there, you know, Tyler Myers, Nikita Zaitsev. It seems like, you know, there's like five or six defensemen that could be going to Vancouver.
They re-signed Alex Edler to that two-year deal. We'll talk about that throughout the course
of the
afternoon.
I like that contract. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that deal. But when you're talking about, you know, Miller, I mean, the draft is obviously in Vancouver, so you knew that the Canucks were most likely going to make a little bit of a splash. But this isn't really a cannonball. This is just kind of like dipping your toes in the shallow end.
Here's a tweet from Matthew Sakaris. Matthew Sakaris, of course, covers the Vancouver Canucks on our sister station, TSN Radio, in Vancouver. Here's his comment about the acquisition of JT Miller. Quote, "That's a horrible trade for the Canucks. Giving up a first-round pick for a player who was being shopped as a salary dump. Even if it's lottery protected and slides to 2021, people were worried that general manager Jim Benning would rob from the future to fix the now, and he has just done it."
Well, it's funny because I was reading earlier how folks were loving the Benning selection in the first round. So to me, it's interesting how some people, and they say this is the guy who's going to play in Russia. He's not going to be there anytime soon.
You're talking about their first round pick.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he's not going to be in Vancouver for 3 years. So if Benning was really trying to save his job, he didn't do a very good job because he's got a guy who's not going to be there for 3 years. So it's interesting how in some instances he's doing what's best for the franchise.
Well, isn't Peter Chiarelli taking over for Jim Benning in a couple of years anyways? No, but I mean, I agree with you, Drew. I mean,
Vancouver Canucks fans just ran around screaming.
Well, and again, I mean, I was saying second line center. Drew was saying third line center. I mean, let's call, let's, you know, maybe call him a third line center for now, but That's a lot to give up for a guy that you got to think there weren't that. It's not like this was the JT Miller sweepstakes. And again, I like Miller. He's a good, solid player, right? Like, he's a guy that he has a couple of 20 goal seasons under his belt, but he's not a guy that you expect to score 35 goals and 70 points next year.
He's a top nine player on a good team is suited for a
he's got
third
good
line
speed.
Role.
He's a scrappy guy. Like, Miller is a good, solid hockey player. He was good with the Rangers. Obviously, you know, the Lightning, he had a reduced role, but I agree. That might be a little bit too much to give up for a guy that, you know, was clearly being shopped by Brisebois.
Yeah, the Winnipeg Jets are one pick away from being their selection in
the
second
round. Just took Matthew Robertson. If you remember when we had Guy Flaming on the show, Drew, we talked, he played for the Edmonton Oil Kings, a good two-way defenseman. So the Rangers get another good young D prospect there, and it looks like the Kings are about to make their pick.
Yeah, the Kings have made their selection. The Winnipeg Jets are up next. We'll bring that to you coming up momentarily. The Winnipeg Jets on the clock right now for their second round selection at number 51 overall, and we'll bring you that pick just as soon as we can here on the program.
The best part of the draft where everybody starts scrambling for names. Like, for the first, you know, 30, even 40, you've kind of got a good idea. Now it's some guys are going off the board.
Wait till you get to the seventh round. That's when the fun really starts.
I'm aware.
Yeah. You know, and the names seem to get more difficult to pronounce as the rounds get longer.
It's also interesting to see how some of these guys show up, some of these guys don't. So we've been live at a number of drafts, and sometimes you'll have guys who are there to this, you know, who are seventh round picks, and then some guys don't even make the trip, so you don't end up talking to them.
The highest ranked player left on Bob McKenzie's board is Brett Leeson. He was ranked number 34 overall. He's, of course, from the Prince Albert Raiders. So that would certainly be a pick that would...
won the E.J. Maguire Award of Excellence for 2019.
Yeah, yes. And another guy to look out for here, I tweeted this out about 3 hours ago, Robert Mastrosimoni, guy played for Shattuck St. Mary's and Chicago Steel of the USHL, 31 goals, 60 points, and he's a Boston University commit, but it looks like the Jets have their 51st overall pick here, Drew.
Yes, they've made the pick, and we're just waiting...
What, Swedish. Simone Lundmark.
Simone Lundmark, a Swedish defenseman. 6'2", 197 is his height, according to the NHL.com draft tracker. So Simone Lundmark, a Swedish defenseman, is the Winnipeg Jets' second-round pick at number 51 overall. So, you know, adding to the pipeline, they took a Swedish player in the second round last year with David Gustafsson. And the
Should
Jets
mention Lundmark is a right-shot guy.
Right-shot guy, yeah. Yep. So the Jets go back to Sweden again, as they did last year in the second round, taking Simone Lundmark. You know, he's a late-born 2000. I'm reading this courtesy of HockeyProspects.com. He split the season between two leagues, starting with the under-20s, where he played 25 games, and then he was promoted to the Swedish Elite League, where he played 28 games. He signed a two-year contract in the Swedish Hockey League, so he's going to be overseas for a couple more years. Always very calm and composed, and it's impossible for him to become stressed. So it sounds like he's certainly doesn't get fazed by the moment based on this scouting report. Very good defensive reads and is always very well positioned. He wins himself time by being perfectly positioned when he gets the puck. So it sounds like positioning is a strength of his. Simone Lundmark, the Jets' second round selection, a defenseman out of Sweden.
Yeah, and obviously the second year in a row, right, that the Jets have taken a Swede in the second round, and, you know, second defenseman in a row here for the Jets. And Bob McKenzie had him ranked 61st overall, so a little bit of a reach. He was ranked 21st overall by NHL Central Scouting, but as you mentioned,
21st Drew, overall among international skaters.
Yeah, European skaters, yeah. non-North American, and as you mentioned, got some good size. We mentioned he's a right-shot defenseman from Sweden. This is from McKean's Hockey. Lundmark is a smooth skating puck mover with a coveted right-handed shot. He lacks any standout traits, but he does everything well. And obviously, we haven't seen Lundmark play before. We're going to obviously, hopefully, have him on the show later. But when you're talking about, you know, Lundmark, you know, another one of those guys, if there's a theme of this year's draft, guys, it's that, you know, a lot of guys are moving up and down the rankings. We talked about Raphael Lavoie going 38th overall to the Edmonton Oilers, and it looks like, you know, the Jets' European scouting staff obviously liked Simone Lundmark. I don't know the exact pronunciation of his name, but obviously the Jets' European amateur scouting staff really liked this guy at 51.
Yeah, absolutely. Dave, sorry, you're going to jump in there?
No, I was just going to say, I think it's a good thing that they're adding to the defensive pipeline. I think, you know, of course, fans are going to recognize that these guys aren't going to be in the NHL anytime soon. But at the same time, you know, it's a good thing to add some guys at positions of weakness currently and that it will eventually become a position of strength.
Yeah, here is what HockeyProspect.com sort of summarized his performance as. Lundmark has the attributes of a modern two-way smart defenseman. He is a puck mover, and if he can be aggressive and physical defensively and less passive in the transition game, he gives himself a much better chance at becoming a viable player in the NHL going forward. So the Jets so far in the 2019 NHL draft looking to restock their back end. They did it obviously in the first round with defenseman Ville Heinola out of Finland. They do it in the second round with defenseman Simon, we'll find out what his pronunciation is, Lundmark out of the Swedish Junior League. So Scandinavia, so far, a very popular place for the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, Drew, and you mentioned, earlier Linköping, which is a very well-known program over in Sweden. Looks like he split the year between the under-20 team and then the senior team. And Dave, you might look at his stats and you might see, okay, he only had 3 assists in the Swedish Senior League. But when you're talking about an 18-year-old playing with 27, 28, 30-year-olds, I mean, I wouldn't get too hung up on those statistics. So when you're talking about Lundmark, you know, we talked about his scouting report. Obviously, you know, got some size and he's a smooth skating defenseman who's got some offensive upside. I mean, this is obviously a long-term prospect, as are most of the prospects in the second round. Don't expect any of these guys to necessarily step into the NHL 2 or 3 years from now.
No, absolutely. It'll be, I mean, time will tell to see what these prospects develop as. I mean, you have to, right now, at this point in time, I think, give the benefit of the doubt to the Jets scouting department, as they have been pretty successful over the years, certainly in finding some guys later on in the draft. Certainly second round pick you hope are going to become translate into NHL players. We're hoping to get Simon Lundmark on the line any minute now. We will bring that to you, of course, when we have him.
Yeah, Drew, Robert Mastro Simone, obviously one of the best names in the draft. I believe that's an Italian name. I absolutely love it. That's a guy that we talked about going to Boston University, tore it up for the Chicago Steel in the United States Hockey League. So as we mentioned, he went 54th to the Detroit Red Wings. I thought he might be an option for the Jets, Dave, at 51. Obviously, 54 is pretty close to 51. But obviously, you know, Simon Lundmark is the guy that Jets fans want to talk about here. And obviously, we're going to get more information, future considerations. His positional play is very strong, and he rarely gets caught out of position. So it sounds like he's a very, very reliable defenseman with some size. He's got a little bit of an offensive touch. But obviously, this is a guy who's going to be a long-term project for the Jets.
Yeah, and I think that, again, this is what you're going to expect from the you're adding to the pipeline, right? That's
exactly.
That's the whole way you have to look at drafts. Sometimes people think, how are you going to solve the team's problems now? We're not solving the team's problems generally. I mean, how many guys will be able to go in and play immediately? The answer is not very many.
I believe we are now joined by the Winnipeg Jets' second round selection in the 2019 NHL draft, Simon Lundmark. Good afternoon, Simon. Good morning in Vancouver. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Good morning.
Good morning. I guess first and foremost, how do you pronounce your first name? Is it Simon or is it Simon?
Simon, I would say.
There you go. Simon. I'll know that for future now. Welcome to TSN Radio 1290. We are the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I guess first and foremost, congratulations on becoming getting drafted into the NHL. Take us through the moment for you.
Thank you very much. I heard my name and got pretty shaky, nervous. But it was a really great feeling, and I'm very happy right now.
Simon, last year you split time between Linköping, the junior team, and then the senior team where you played 28 games. Can you just talk about your season progressing up to the senior league?
Yeah, as you said, I started with the juniors in the beginning, and I played very well in the juniors. And then I got a chance with the SHL team. And it went well in the first game, and I continued to play games and still played good. So then I got rewarded with a contract and played there the rest of the season.
Simon, what do you know about Winnipeg and what do you know about the Winnipeg Jets?
It's a great city, great fans, and I want to know more about them.
Simon Lundmark is our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290, day 2 coverage of the 2019 NHL Draft. Simon was drafted 51st overall in the second round here by the Jets. You know, Simon, for people who haven't seen you play, so is there a defenseman that you model your game after, that you sort of look to as a guy that you want to perform like?
I don't really know. Some people say that I'm a bit like Adam Larsson in the Edmonton. But I don't really know by myself.
Simon, have you ever played with Jets' second-round pick from last year, David Gustafsson? He played for HV71 in the Swedish league. Do you know him at all through through your time? Yeah,
I played some games with him in the national team, so I know him a bit.
And Simon, are there any other Jets draft picks that you're familiar with?
I don't really know. I'm not sure about that.
David, obviously Jets development camp goes next week. Are you going to just fly right here to Winnipeg, or what's your plan?
I don't really know. I have to speak with my agent.
You're just still shocked by the moment. I mean, it must be so nice after so many years of hard work, you know, having your, I assume your family is there with you, you know, just the reaction of the whole family to hear your name called in Vancouver.
Yeah, it feels amazing, and especially to have Dom here as well. It feels very good.
Simon Lundmark is our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jets second round selection just made at number 51 overall. What was it like last night? Obviously, you know, you were in the building last night, and then you have to have that night's sleep. I bet you that wasn't a very restful night for you last night.
I actually slept very well last night. I don't know. It was good to be here last night to see how it all goes.
Simon, go ahead.
Yeah. Hey, sorry, I'm done.
No, it's all good. We talked about development camp next week, and you mentioned that you have to talk to your representation about coming to Winnipeg for Jets development camp. But aside from that, what are your kind of plans off-season training? Obviously, you know, it's June right now, but I imagine you're going to be working on your strength. But what are your plans in the off-season preparing for next year? We obviously, you know, don't think you're going to be playing for the Jets next year, but what are your plans as of now?
To have more strength in my upper body, so I can be more tough and aggressive in my play, and also to be a more quick on the first strides, and also my jumping, so I can that's the same thing basically, so I get faster.
What's your biggest skill? What's your greatest attribute that fans should be able to look for, that you point to as the most solid part of your game?
I would probably say my hockey sense is the greatest part about me.
Well,
sorry.
No, go ahead. Part of that was my
my passing game, I would say.
Hockey sense and passing. Well, those are two good things for a defenseman to have. I think it's safe to say Jets fans will like to hear that. Simon Lundmark, Jets second round selection, number 51 overall. Simon, congratulations. Welcome to the Winnipeg Jets organization. Thanks so much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's head to break. We'll bring you more. 1 hour done. That flew by. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Day two coverage of the 2019 NHL Draft. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to 2019 second round, second day coverage of the NHL Draft. I am your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. We just previously heard from Simon Lundmark. He is the Winnipeg Jets' second-round selection, taken at number 51 overall. If you're just joining us, Simon is a right-shot defenseman, split his time between the Swedish junior team and the Swedish Elite League last year. Good height, 6'2", around 200 pounds. He said his best attributes right now are his hockey sense and his passing ability, and he looks to work upon his first stride and his powerful skating this offseason. So Simon Lundmark joins David Gustafsson last year as a Winnipeg Jets second round selection from the country of Sweden.
And one of our listeners just pointed out, Ron Palmer pointed out, like how the Jets already had his name on his jersey. So, I mean, it could have been a name bar, but the fact is that the Jets already had him, they had interest in him, so it's clearly a player that the Jets had in their list and that they wanted to acquire. So it's good for the organization.
Yes, it'll be a little while now until the Jets draft again, as the Jets don't draft until the fourth round. So there will be, you know, a bit of a pause here, but it'll give us some time to sort of breathe and catch up on what has been an absolutely hectic and sort of chaotic last 90 minutes with a number of significant trades happening. A lot of trades actually in that second round saw teams move down or move up, but they were just trades for draft picks. So a team would often trade their second round pick and then throw in a third round pick or throw in a fourth round pick to move up a couple spots. So there was some wheeling and dealing in that second round. The Jets stood pat. They take Simon Lundmark with the 51st overall selection, Ezra.
Right, and I don't think any of us would be surprised if there's some more trades coming up in the third, fourth, fifth, sixth rounds. And yeah, the Devils have the last pick here in the second round, and we should also mention Brett Leeson went to the Washington Capitals at 56th overall, so always nice to see those guys that passed through the draft. You remember J.C. LePon was a guy who passed through the draft, and obviously, you know, he's gone on to a really nice career with the Manitoba Moose. So Brett Leeson, a guy that was really good for Canada at the World Juniors, and obviously for the PA Raiders, who went all the way to the Memorial Cup, didn't win it, but you know, great story with Leeson. So, you know, talking about Simon Lundmark, obviously, you know, first off, a really well-spoken kid. And, you know, I asked him about development camp coming up, which starts Monday. It's unbelievable. But, you know, 2 days from now, we're going to see all these guys.
Well, just to clarify, I think they're doing medicals on Monday.
Yeah.
Sure. Testing. So they'll be on the ice for the first time on Tuesday.
Yeah, so Tuesday, it's possible that we're going to see Simon Lundmark. And obviously, Ville Heinola is the guy that Jets fans are probably really going to want to see. But Jets fans want to see all the draft picks, but obviously, you know, for a guy like Simon Lundmark, you know, he went a little bit higher, but that's the way the draft goes. I mean, Dave and I, you know, we went to, what was it, 5 drafts in a row, and, you know, you see this all the time where guys fall and, you know, guys rise up the ranking. So, again, I wouldn't get too fixated on where a guy is ranked, but Simon Lundmark obviously, you know, has the pedigree. And if you talk about, you know, just as an aside here, the Jets European scouting, I mean, you know, Sammy Niku, 7th round pick. I mean, Santeri Virtanen, he was, I believe, a 4th rounder. He had a big role for Finland at the World Junior. So, I mean, they've really hit on a lot of these European players. David Gustafsson, a guy that, you know, we didn't know a lot about last year when he was taken, I believe it was 60th overall. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a guy that, you know, they expect to play a pretty prominent role on the Moose this year, Dave.
Yeah, for sure. And he just signed his 3-year deal. So, I mean, you got another guy who's, you know, adding to the fold. And I agree with you, Ezzy. And it's funny because that was a big topic of conversation with Jets general manager Kevin Cheveldayoff about the European scouting. And at the end of the draft last night, usually he does a chat at the end of both days of the draft once it's concluded.
Yeah. Chevy will join us later this afternoon once round 7 is concluded in Vancouver, of course.
And that was the focus of conversation with the Jets general manager, was their European scouting, what they look like. And he talked about how consistent it's been since the Jets have moved back to Winnipeg, and how they've had a very similar group. So it's obviously a group he trusts well, because he's gone to that well quite a number of times, and it's proved to be very worthwhile, because they've benefited from some of these, especially, again, when we talk about it, the later picks, you know, the Sammy Nikus, those are the key.
Connor
Hellebuck, yeah, you know, absolutely. Of course, Andrew Kopp,
Eric Comrie.
Yeah. I mean, well, Comrie was a second round. Yeah. But the point is that you've got guys, Mason Appleton is 6.
What about Dustin Byfuglien? I mean, that was a Chicago draft pick, but he, what was he, 8th round?
A round that no longer exists.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
No, and
it happens every year.
Yeah, and that's the key, right? Like, we tend to get fixated on, but I mean, and there's a litany of guys we could mention that are prominent players, you know, the Pavel Datsyuks, the Henrik Zetterberg, like all these guys. I always default to Detroit, but like it's all of these guys who didn't have the hockey pedigree necessarily, and don't hear their names get called, and then they go on to great things. And, you know, to use a basketball reference, Fred Van Fleet, who just obviously won with the Raptors, he was the guy who went undrafted. I actually watched his video. I think Ralph retweeted about his, when, you know, they were having a draft party for him, and he
played collegiately at Wichita State.
Right, and so he didn't get drafted.
I thought you were a Kentucky guy.
Kentucky played Wichita State in the second round of that year. It was one of the best tournament games of recent memory. Okay. Anyways, Kentucky defeated them as a number 8 seed. Wichita State was a number 1
just
seed.
Talk about DeMarcus Cousins here.
Yeah, there's another great guy from Kentucky right there is DeMarcus Cousins. Boogie.
The point I'm making is the fact that despite the fact that you don't have that pedigree and you don't get that first, second, third round pick, or even picked at all, doesn't necessarily mean anything. Doesn't define who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean that you can't have success in the NHL. And again,
Neil Pionk.
Well, more importantly, but more important than Neil Pionk is Mark Giordano.
Sure.
You know, I mean, there's a guy who's now won his first Norris, and he's a guy who was never drafted in the NHL. So if you work hard, you can achieve your goal still.
By the way, just quickly here, guys, we're into the third round. The St. Louis Blues have just selected Nikita Alexandrov.
No, that's the last pick of the second round.
Oh, sorry. The last pick of the
Simple
second
math.
Round.
31 plus 31 equals 62.
Colorado is on the clock, so yes, we are okay. Into the third round. But I don't know if that's the first time we've ever had back-to-back Nikitas, because the Devils at 61 took Nikita.
Oh, good luck pronouncing this one.
Okotiuk.
You walked into that one all on your own.
Okotiuk. Okay, I don't know.
Yeah, okay. Good job there. Nice try. Anyways, welcome back. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday afternoon. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290, this segment of the show brought to you by our friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated and has been serving quality home-style food since 1985. For a hot, fresh breakfast starting at 6:30 a.m. weekdays and all day long and all weekend long, visit Bernstein's at 1700 Cordon Avenue. That's in the Cordon Village Mall. It's amazing to say we really haven't broken down. We haven't really discussed the Jacob Trouba trade. I mean,
last week.
I was going to say, time is fleeting.
It feels like that trade was like a month ago.
It was only 5 days ago. I mean, yeah. Time goes by quickly. Trouba, of course, traded from the Winnipeg Jets to the New York Rangers in exchange for defenseman Neil Pionk and the first-round pick that the Jets used last night to draft Ville Heinola. You know, when the trade happened, you know, you knew that Trouba was going to get traded. I don't think anybody was surprised about the trade. But still, to me, 5 days later, you know, having had time to, you know, sort of
digest,
having had time to consider all the factors in play.
I hope you digested that cookie that you just ate.
Well, soon enough, that'll be digested. But
big thanks to producer Chris for bringing those cookies in.
To me, I still don't think the Jets got enough for Jacob Trouba. And I've heard
Were they ever going to get enough? I mean, Chevy's back was against the wall here.
Well, but even if they weren't, I mean, quote, you know, so maybe you're not going to get the same equivalent of Jacob Trouba in return, but I think they should have done better than Pionk and their own first round pick.
Yeah, and it's possible, but I don't think that you can look at this trade, guys, without considering the circumstances, right? How many teams did Jacob Trouba want to go to? You hear that it was maybe only two teams.
He doesn't have a no-move clause. What's his options? So let's say he gets traded.
Well, but the point is that the Jets clearly wanted to get that first-round pick back. And it's clear because they got it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, so when you're talking about it, and we talked about this going back over a month ago, I didn't think that the Jets were ever going to be able to trade Jacob Trouba for Jacob Trouba. What I mean by that is I don't think they were ever going to get a top-pairing right-side guy. Or even like a 1B, right? So you hear guys like Brett Pesce or a guy like Shane Gostisbehere, who obviously is a left side guy. Pesci's a right side guy, but I mean Pesci's a guy that Carolina doesn't want to trade. So it's not. And first off, I don't necessarily know Trouba for Pesce straight up would have been a good trade for the Jets because Trouba's better defenseman, obviously. But the point is, Drew, were the Jets ever going to get a player that you would, unless they threw in somebody else and made it a 2-for-2 trade, like? Give me one guy that was out there that you would say, okay, that guy is just as good, if not better, than Trouba.
You don't have to, but it doesn't have to be just as good or better than Jacob Trouba, but there's probably, I mean, I don't know, obviously, but to me, there are better defensemen they could have received in return than Neil Pionk.
Would you have done Jacob Trouba for a first-round pick and Olli Maatta, for example? Because I don't think Olli Maatta is that much better than Neil Pionk.
I wouldn't have made that trade, but there's so much about this trade that I don't understand. The thought that, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff was backed into a corner or had his back against the wall. What leverage did Jacob Trouba have? I don't understand that people are making it out to seem.
Well, I don't think that the Jets wanted to go into next season with him on a one-year contract.
But they don't have to. I'm not saying you hold on to him. I'm saying you trade him, but you don't have to trade him to where he wants to go.
Yeah, I agree with you, Drew.
Well, it's more complicated than that. And I know you know this because Jacob Trouba's representation wasn't able to talk to other teams.
I don't understand that either.
But the Jets aren't going to trade him, Dave, to a team where Jacob Trouba and Kurt Overhart have to know that that team, they have to know that he's going to sign there. Like, the Jets aren't going to trade him to a team where he doesn't know there's a contract.
But you see with the Toronto Raptors, we're talking about basketball. They traded for a guy who's got 1 year left on his deal. And
Kawhi, right?
Kawhi Leonard.
Or Marc Gasol, too, had 1 year left, right?
But forget about him. They traded for Kawhi Leonard.
That's my boy, Marc Gasol.
I just don't understand the argument. So let's say they trade him. I don't know. Pick a random team.
Anaheim.
Sure. Let's say they trade him to the Anaheim Ducks. And Trouba doesn't want to go to Anaheim. I mean, we don't know. But let's say he didn't want to go to whatever team the Jets traded him to. What options does he have?
He doesn't have to sit out.
Well, come on.
No. You're asking what his options are.
But it's realistic, though, because look at, obviously Chevy's back was against the wall here because he made the trade earlier than we thought he was going to make the trade.
I don't understand that either. Why did he need to make that trade on Monday?
I think they wanted the first round pick.
Yeah, but that trade's going to be there on Thursday. That trade's going to be there on Friday morning.
I agree.
Why not let it percolate? Why not let you see how many other options are out there?
Were there other options?
If there aren't, there's no rush to do it on Monday as opposed to doing it on Friday.
I think you have to all hear Dave. Let's get Dave Mnookin here because Drew and I are talking way too much. But Dave, you have to think that a team is not going to trade for Jacob Trouba. Look at it, you know, from the other perspective. A team's not going to trade for Jacob Trouba unless they know there's a good chance they're going to sign him long term.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think I think there's a bit of a disparity. Well, no, but I mean, again, it depends.
The Raptors traded for Kawhi Leonard.
No, but
a chance they were going to sign him.
Yeah, but this isn't Kawhi Leonard here. We're talking about Jacob Trouba. So I don't think a team is going to trade for Trouba and then just sign him to 1 year.
Why not?
It doesn't make any sense. You're going to give up a first-round pick and a defenseman and then only possibly get him for 1 year?
Erik Karlsson got traded from the Ottawa Senators to the San Jose Sharks with 1 year left on his contract.
All due respect to Trouba, he's not Erik Karlsson.
Of course he's not Erik Karlsson.
You just compared him to Erik Karlsson.
It's the exact same scenario. You trade him, you acquire him, you give him, you play that 1 year, you try and woo him on your city.
Well, it didn't happen, so what are we even talking about this for?
I just don't understand why. I don't think that the Jets played this out well enough, Dave.
No, the only thing I would say is, or I started to say, was that I think there's a bit of a disparity in terms of what is actually out there and what was really offered, right? So we're talking about, well, he could have had this. Like, Larry Brooks had an article in the New York Post on the weekend.
On Sunday.
On the weekend. Yeah. And it basically sounded like the Rangers were going to give up the farm for Jacob Trouba.
There was a bidding war between the Rangers, the Islanders, and the Devils based on Larry Brooks' article.
Right. I mean, for example, the Jets probably would love to have a guy like Brady Shea. Well, they're not going to trade Brady Shea in a first-round pick for Trouba.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
That's just too much.
No, I agree. But I think I know what Drew's saying. Like, Drew's just saying that it just seems unusual that there was this idea that Trouba had that much control over his destiny.
Yeah,
because he really didn't. I mean, obviously his options, in my mind again, were very limited. So you've got a guy who really doesn't have a no movement clause, doesn't have a no trade clause.
Yeah.
So there's really not that.
Why are you even asking Kurt Overhart Jacob Trouba he wants to go?
I could think that Kevin Cheveldayoff is trying to negotiate with his fellow GM in good faith. You know, the idea that, you know, they're. But again, you didn't attach a conditional pick to it. If he resigns,
we also haven't mentioned the cap space here, guys.
Yeah. Okay. Well, no,
I mean, you need the cap. You don't need the cap space a year from now.
I'm not saying that they absolutely needed to trade Jacob Trouba. You needed the cap space. There was no question in my mind that you needed to trade Jacob Trouba. But the return isn't enough. The fact there's not a conditional draft pick, which has almost become standard in those situations. The Ottawa Senators got a conditional draft pick once Erik Karlsson re-signed in San Jose.
Yep.
The fact that the Jets didn't get a conditional draft pick. The fact that they make it sound like Trouba had all this wonderful leverage when, from my perspective, sitting here, he had no leverage. I mean, his leverage is to say to another team that he doesn't like going there, okay, I'm going to play the 1 year, and then I'm going to leave. And that team is buyer beware.
And what you're saying is they're taking a risk on that opportunity to have an added player who could be a top-pairing defenseman for you to try and get you over the edge. And if you can convince him over the year, you sign him. And if not, worst-case scenario, he was a rental.
Exactly.
For a year, as opposed to at the deadline.
Exactly. I mean, had Erik Karlsson not re-signed in San Jose, it was a risk they took. It maybe worked out. It maybe didn't work out. They would say probably it didn't because they didn't win the Stanley Cup. But c'est la vie. To me, I don't understand the argument that the Jets were boxed into a corner here. When we come back, John Mattis of thescore.com, he's their national hockey writer, he's going to join us from Vancouver. You're listening to Day 2 coverage of the 2019 NHL Draft. We're live with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Saturday afternoon, welcome back to Day 2 coverage of the 2019 NHL Draft. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. We now head back to Vancouver where we're joined by John Mattis. John, of course, is the national hockey writer for thescore.com, a frequent guest here on this program. John, good afternoon. I guess it's good late morning there on the West Coast. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, no problem. There's a few things to talk about.
Yeah, it's, you know, a hectic or a quiet Friday turned into a hectic Saturday morning. So let's start with the big deal of the day. That, of course, being PK Subban going from the Nashville Predators to the New Jersey Devils. I mean, from a Devils perspective, sure, they're going to have a big salary on their books for the next 3 years, but you have to like that acquisition if you're a fan of the New Jersey Devils, I think.
Yeah, I definitely like it. It's, you know, now that I'm thinking about it and their trajectory as a team, you know, he's signed for another 3 years, Subban, at $9 million. And, you know, at the end of that, is it a re-sign? Are they hoping that, you know, they can really make a run for it in these next 2 years? I don't know. So the fact that he's not, you know, a super long-term deal is a little, like, odd in terms of, you know, where the Devils are placed within the hockey world at this point. I don't know if they are, you know, contending for a Stanley Cup within those 3 years. But nevertheless, in the short term, I thought it was a great deal for them. Not giving up a whole heck of a lot. You know, Jeremy Davies, decent prospects. Steven Santini, just a depth player. And then the 34th pick, which became Bobby Brink, obviously. And then a second. It sounds like from Nashville's perspective, they wanted to move on from the salary so that they could... It sounds like they're going to go hard at Matthew Shane. David Poile mentioned that he is very interested and very invested in getting a big time forward in the organization ASAP during free agency. So, like, I get it from both teams, and I do really like it from the Devils' perspective because, one, I like when GMs kind of swing for the fences, and two, you have Jack Hughes and PK Subban joining your organization in back-to-back days, and that really bodes well for Taylor Hall, their star re-signing there. He's obviously a free agent in 2020. And to be honest, before Jack Hughes, before PK Subban, you look around that organization and you go, okay, you got Nico Hish here, you got a couple other, you know, decent pieces on the back end. You know, you got a forward here, a forward there, but nothing that really was super enticing to Taylor Hall. And now they've sweetened the pot, and who knows if they're done kind of improving this team, because that PK Subban trade is a win-now move because he's 30 years old. And like I said earlier, 3 years left on that deal. So it's not like this is a long-term investment. It might end up being that, but it seems to me like they've got some plans to be competitive real fast here.
John, it's been a little bit quiet. Let's get the Toronto Maple Leafs question out of the you know, the pocket right now. It's been a little bit quiet. Obviously, yesterday there were some rumblings that PK Subban might be headed to Toronto. Obviously, you know, we already talked about that. He's going to New Jersey. He's already on New Jersey. But first off, did that ever make any sense for you with the cap crunch that Kyle Dubas and the Toronto Maple Leafs are facing? And, you know, when you're talking about the Leafs, we know that Kasperi Kapanen, there's a contract that's in the drawer, and he's going to sign a three-year deal, according to TSN's Bob McKenzie. But when you're talking about the Leafs, I mean, what else are you hearing? Are you expecting them to make any moves, or are you just expecting it to be more chatter? Because we've just really, it's been all talk as of now.
Well, yeah, the Subban rumor was odd to me, because you look at that $9 million cap and you go, how in the world will they be able to afford that when they are up against it right now, trying to sign Marner and Kapanen and Johnsson and whatnot. And then you start thinking about it below the surface, and you're like, okay, well, if Nashville retains some salary, then that makes a little more sense. And then, you know, they end up getting rid of Patrick Marleau today in a pretty smart move. And that frees up a ton of space. So, like, Toronto's in a really, like a serious bind here, where the Mitch Marner negotiations are ongoing, but they can't finalize. Like, they can't give Mitch Marner what he wants currently in their state that they're in. So, you know, moving on from Marleau is gigantic, and you know what, they giving away a first round pick as they did, mind you, it's top 10 protected in 2020, but still a first round pick for essentially just unloading a contract. Like, that's not easy to do. That's not easy to swallow if you're Kyle Dubas. But like, the fact of the matter is that they need to sign Mitch Marner. He's commanding a lot of money, and it's going to end up being Marner, Tavares, Matthews as these big ticket items on their team, and the rest of the players are either going to have to be shipped out, like a Nikita Zaitsev, who makes a little bit too much and has too much term, obviously, like Patrick Marleau, who's gone now, Connor Brown might be gone, because you devote so much money to these three guys that, like, the math just doesn't add up, especially when the salary cap, the projection was $3 million. It's going to end up around 81.5 or 82. So it's just like, I'll do this in the next 2 weeks. And this sort of dates back a couple days too, because these things don't just come up and surprise you. But like, the last month or so since the season ended has been hectic for him, and it's just going to get even more intense, and he's going to have to get even more creative because they're definitely not out of the weeds yet. But took some steps today, and I would assume as the captain deal gets done ASAP, and then it comes down to Marner and whatever they can accomplish in free agency, and obviously Johnsen lower on the to-do list, but still a good player that they probably need in that forward group. So things are shaping out pretty well for the Leafs, like all things considered.
John, are you expecting that the Carolina Hurricanes buy Marleau out and then he signs the one-year deal with the Sharks? TSN's Bob McKenzie reported that yesterday that the expectation was that Marleau does want to finish his career in San Jose.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's, like, Carolina's become this team where, under Tom Dundon, they're operating a little differently than they did before in terms of, you know, hey, we'll take this and we'll take that and we'll acquire more picks. And they're becoming a dumping zone of sorts. And today it's worked out beautifully for them, and it's going to end up being a buyout. And then obviously, this was something that was facilitated through Patrick Marleau because he had a no-move clause. So he ends up in San Jose at a reduced rate. And really, I mean, that's the best-case scenario given what was occurring in Toronto, where they, you know, the guy is essentially a fourth liner at this point in his career, as sad as that is, considering he's a legend and probably a future Hall of Famer. Like $6.25 million. That's just an albatross. So that last year of his contract was always going to be an issue. He knew he wasn't wanted from a hockey standpoint in Toronto, given his salary. So I think, he deserves kudos because Marleau could have said, you know what? I signed this contract. I earned it. You know, I don't know anyone, anything. And I love Toronto and my family enjoys it here and we're going to stay. But he decided to play ball and he's going to head back to San Jose where obviously he built a family and a home, and everything's going to sort of work well as he rides off into the sunset, presumably.
John Mattis is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to Day 2 coverage of the 2019 NHL Draft. John is in Vancouver for the draft. It was only 5 days ago, John. It feels sort of like it was 5 weeks ago. That's when the Jets traded Jacob Trouba to the New York Rangers. We were having a spirited conversation about it before we brought you on here. You know, from your perspective, you know, covering the entire league as a whole, what are your thoughts? What were your initial thoughts on the Trouba trade? And have those thoughts changed as, you know, the 5 days have lapsed and sort of the opportunity for sober second thought may have kicked in?
Well, one thing I'll say is that I think whether it's media fans, anyone around the game who sees a trade, you automatically judge it in the sense like, wow, they got totally ripped off, or wow, how could you not get more for that type of player? So I sympathize with the GMs that have to sort of explain themselves and try to dig their way out of the bad PR because it's not simple, right? You try to work out a deal with a team. They're not interested in X, so you go to Y, and you go to Z, and then eventually you figure it out. And at the end of the day, it's not the best deal possible, but it's a deal, and you move on with your life. But, you know, media and fans don't think that way. So I sympathize with Trevor Dayoff, but at the same time, that return is very underwhelming. I get that Jacob Trouba is, you know, a guy who didn't want to be in Winnipeg, so the leverage wasn't exactly strong. I know that, you know, they're sending him to New York where a deal wasn't technically in place, so that, you know, you got to sort of factor that into the package you're getting back. I guess there's varying opinions of Pionk and his potential, but it sounds like, based on, you know, the people that scout at the pro level around the league, that he's more or less a third-pairing defenseman. So I didn't love it. I didn't love it for the Winnipeg Jets, but like I said, it's very difficult to really, you know, throw too much criticism at a GM when, you know, their hands are tied. Like, if it's just strictly, you know, a hockey trade where it's, you know, here's PK Subban, here's Shea Weber, one for one, you know, there's a, you know, maybe a little bit of a discussion over term and money and the differences between the two players, but essentially just a hockey trade, then that's the free game. Okay, everyone pile on and have your opinion. With Trouba Dayoff, I think there's a bit of a, you stop and think, okay, what could he really have done with Trouba? But, I guess, long story short, I don't like the return, but sometimes it's just, that's the way it goes when you know, the gun's pointing at your head.
Now, John, just going back to last night, as we mentioned, you're there in Vancouver. You're close to the draft floor. You were, of course, there last night, Friday night. And wanted to ask you what shocked you the most, because really it started with Kirby Dach going third overall to the Chicago Blackhawks. We knew that Dach was going to most likely be a top 10 pick, but a lot of people thought that Alex Turcotte, because he's from the Chicago area, a lot of people had the Hawks taking Turcotte or maybe even a Bowen Byram, who obviously went fourth to the Colorado Avalanche. But was the biggest shock to you, and I imagine most people there, Moritz Seider going sixth overall to the Detroit Red Wings? And then we also have to throw in Peyton Krebs, who went 17th to the Vegas Golden Knights. Many people thought Krebs would be, you know, a top 12 pick.
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head there, where Dach, not a surprise, like nothing that you underline or bold and go, wow, that's incredible. It's more of, okay, that changes the dynamic of things, like a top five pick, but maybe, you know, most people thought he'd be the number five versus three and four, where Turcotte and Byram seem to be. But, you know, you can talk yourself into believing it. Moritz Seider, completely out of nowhere. I'm sure you guys saw that the kid's reaction was incredible. Just blown away by the fact that the Detroit Red Wings like him so much to take him sixth when he was pegged, I don't know, early teens at best. Like 11, 12 was sort of the highest that people seemed to be on him. And the majority was more 15th, 18th, around there. So that was great, and honestly, I don't know if it was portrayed through TV, but in the building, it was just a weird reaction where people were kind of looking around going, who is this kid? Didn't see that one coming. So it just sort of like an awe. So those two were right off the bat. That completely changed the dynamic of this draft, and it was already going to be a draft that was a little all over the place. You know, a lot of players that are in the top 40, that are consensus top 40 guys, but the order in which they go was always up in the air. This is a weird draft in that sense. I'd say, you know, Spencer Knight going 13 is a little odd, just because you think about Florida and their situation going into the summer. They are apparently hot on Sergei Bobrovsky, so you give Bobrovsky 8 years, but also draft Spencer Knight, who is one or two, well, not 1 or 2 years away, but I'd say 3 years away from being an NHLer. That's a bit of a weird pick in a sense, but at the same time, a lot of people thought that Spencer Knight was worthy of a top 15 pick. If you're going best player available, then okay, that's justifiable. It's just with goalies being sort of kind of a difficult position to peg in terms of drafting, and a lot of top end guys going in the second round, I thought picking him at 13 was a bit of an eyebrow raiser. But again, like, that guy's polished, full package goalie who's going to end up being an NHL starter, so you can't really blame them. You guys mentioned Peyton Krebs, 17 to Vegas. That's going to look really good in a couple of years. I get it. He's hurt right now, but all things considered, all things equal, he's a top 10 pick at worst. And then Lassie Thompson going 19 to Ottawa is a bit of a reach in terms of projections. That doesn't mean that it's not going to be a good pick, or that, you know, it was something egregious, but notable in terms of when you look at the draft and factor in Seider and Knight and Krebs and Thompson, you seem to come in with that group of wild cards when you're looking back on round one.
John, last question for you. Would you have traded JT Miller to the Vancouver Canucks for a first-round pick? I guess let me rephrase it. If you're the Vancouver Canucks, would have you traded a first-round pick for JT Miller?
That's funny you rephrase that, because I was about to say, well, yes, I definitely would have done that. But yeah, if you're the Vancouver, I don't really get it, because you're not winning with your current roster. Like, JT Miller is kind of the guy you get at the deadline, right?
Yeah.
He's the last piece, or he's, you know, a free agent that you assign in the summer when you're getting close, right? He's not going to change your franchise. He's actually overpaid, I would argue. Good net front guy, you know, can score. Like, he's got things going for him, but definitely not that price. So I thought it was odd. Some people suggesting on Twitter that it was kind of a Jim Benning trying to save his job trade, in terms of, if I can get into the playoffs next year, you know, I'm laughing, I'm not on the hot seat. So there's that to consider. Like I said earlier, with Cheval Dayoff and his, you know, his difficulty with the Truva trade. So I don't know. I shake my head at that trade. It seems a little odd.
John Mattis is the national hockey writer for thescore.com. He joins us from Vancouver, day two site of the 2019 NHL draft. John, always appreciate your time and insight.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. Have a good one.
Our pleasure, John. Take care. When we come back, much more from the draft. The Jets still a number of picks away. In fact, a whole round away from selecting. But much more to come, much more to talk about. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Day 2 coverage of the 2019 NHL Draft on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday afternoon, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, day 2 coverage of the 2019 NHL Draft. You can join us here in studio. Reach us via Twitter at Illegal Curve is the best way to do that. You can also do it via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined by Dave Minuke and Ezra Ginsberg. This segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Of course, we are in the third round of the 2019 draft. We are expecting pick number 86 to the Vegas Golden Knights. The Jets are still about 30 or so picks away. They don't select until number 113 in the fourth round. So that explains the lull that we're seeing in terms of draft picks by the Winnipeg Jets.
Maybe Vegas is going to take Trent Miner. We know that the Golden Knights like to take the players connection. With the Manitoba connections, right?
The Golden Knights, of course, taking Peyton Krebs in the first round last night, shortly before the Jets selected Ville Heinola, Finnish defenseman, in the first round at number 20 overall. In the round 2 this afternoon, the Jets taking Simon Lundmark, a Swedish defenseman, at number 51 overall. Simon joined us earlier on the program.
Is it possible, Drew, that the Jets are going to take a defenseman with their fourth round pick? I would be shocked.
Why?
You would have to think that they would take a forward. But
no, I wouldn't. I think you take the best player available on your board. It doesn't matter at this point in time.
Thank you, Captain Obvious.
Well, but I mean, if it's a defenseman, I wouldn't be shocked then. I mean, you're the one who said shocked. I didn't say it. In any event, if you missed our interview with Simon Lundmark earlier, it's available on illegalcurve.com. You can check it out there. All the audio, of course, from last night and today. It's a chaotic day in the NHL world with rounds 2 through 7 of the NHL draft happening this afternoon. There's been a number of trades earlier today. It got started off around 11:15 or so Central Time,
yep,
with the Toronto Maple Leafs in a pure salary dump, trading Patrick Marleau to the Carolina Hurricanes. They also threw in, and this is the big one, a first round pick goes to Carolina.
That was the sweetener.
Marleau likely to be bought out by the Hurricanes to go then sign in San Jose where his family is. Hurricanes are going to try and keep him around. They might try and convince him, but if they can't, they're going to buy him out. But the Hurricanes, for using their cap space, get a first round pick from the Toronto Maple Leafs in a pure salary dump.
Right. And can we just go back to last night and talk about what Tom Dundon was wearing?
I didn't see it. I'm sorry.
Was it a tracksuit? Was it sweatpants? I mean, I realize the guy's a billionaire,
yeah,
and he can wear whatever he wants. And also, Daryl Cates' kid is 6'10" now.
He doesn't even fit in the shot anymore.
It's unbelievable. Remember when Daryl Cates' kid was like six?
A little kid with an afro.
Yeah, remember when he? Yeah, did he? Is he still have the big hair?
Still got the big hair, but okay. He's, yeah, but he's fit. It fits his big body, yeah, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, there you go.
And I was joking, but he's got to be at least what, Dave, 6'2"? Like he's
big. No, he's bigger than that.
He's big now.
I'd say he's at least 6'4", yeah, 6'5". He towers over almost everybody there. So
we haven't got any older, but Daryl Cates' kid has somehow managed to age dramatically since, you know, how many years would it have been? 20 years since he sort of first made his appearance?
He's been going up there forever.
Yeah.
As long as Daryl Cates has been owner, right?
Well, I mean, he was there. His son was there. Did he come up for the Yakupov trade, or was it before the Yakupov pick, or was it before the Yakupov pick?
Honestly, he's been doing it forever.
Yeah, it seems like it's been certainly a long time.
First overall pick ever.
There's some bad ones. Maybe as
Patrick's defense.
Well, I was going to say, as the show progresses, maybe we can actually have that debate, as we're going to be with you at least for the next couple hours, right up until the conclusion of the draft, and then we'll have Jets general manager Kevin Cheveldayoff on air with us later on this afternoon. So we mentioned the Marleau trade, a pure salary dump.
Yep.
Carolina gets a first-round pick next season as a result of using their space. That was just sort of the aperitif before the main course, and that was P.K. Subban getting traded from the Nashville Predators, Jets Central Division rival. Of course, we remember seeing P.K. Subban here many times before. He goes to the New Jersey Devils in exchange for defenseman Steven Santini, defenseman Jeremy Davies, and a second-round pick this year and a second-round pick next year. From the Devils' perspective, Sure, Subban had a bit of a down year, but you move him to New Jersey. I like that deal for New Jersey.
Yeah, and you know, during the break, I was just kind of writing out the Devils' new depth chart, and if you look up the middle...
kept putting hearts next to all the players' names.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
No, but when you're talking about up the middle, Dave, you've got Nico Hischier, obviously, 2 years ago, first overall pick. Jack Hughes, the 2019 first overall pick. Another first rounder, Pavel Zacha. Winnipeg's Travis Zajac, obviously. You've got Taylor Hall, obviously, former MVP of the league. You've got Blake Coleman coming off of the 22-goal season. Kyle Palmieri, 27-goal season last year. And that right side of the defense now, P.K. Subban, Damon Severson, and then Connor Carrick, as it stands now, is your third-pairing guy. And then, obviously, Will Butcher you've got there, and Andy Green, the veteran. But this Devils team, guys, I mean, if you would have told Devils fans 3 or 4 months ago, you're going to miss the playoffs, but you're going to get Jack Hughes and P.K. Subban.
They might have made that trade.
Yeah, I think Devils fans would say, okay, you know, we'll sit this one out, we'll miss the playoffs this year, but next year we're going to have a pretty darn good team. So, I mean, you talk about, you know, some teams that really turned it around quickly, like the St. Louis Blues, you know, bringing in Ryan O'Reilly, Tyler Bozak, Pat Maroon. I think the Devils guys, and again, I'm biased. Anybody who's listened to IC over the years knows that I like the Devils, but even if you're not a Devils fan, you have to be looking at that division, the Metro Division, and you have to be looking at the Devils and the Rangers, and you have to be saying both of these teams could be at the top of the division next year.
Well, I mean, it would certainly be a leap, but they both teams have done a lot to improve their standings from two non-playoff teams to two playoff teams, potentially, if not next year, then certainly probably the year after.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, Washington's still pretty good, but...
Yeah, Philadelphia, you would say, has improved themselves as well with a number of the moves that we'll talk about over the course of the afternoon. Then, after the Subban trade, you're like, okay, now things are cooking. It was a quiet Friday night. Things are moving. Things
nice
are shaking.
Nice little Friday night.
A nice little Friday night with no picks. Then the Vancouver Canucks go and they decide they want to get in on the trade business. They acquire JT Miller from the Tampa Bay Lightning in exchange for a first-round draft pick that will either come in effect 2020 or 2021, depending on what the Canucks do next year in terms of making the playoffs, a third-round pick next season, and journeyman goaltender Marek Mazanek. From my perspective, and we talked about this with John Mattis a couple minutes ago, the Vancouver Canucks trading a first-round pick for JT Miller is a way big overpay.
Yeah, it's an overpay. I'm not going to disagree with that, but you have to look at, you know, the moves that are coming for the Canucks, right? We know that they're really hot after a right shot defenseman. And Tyler Myers is a guy whose name's out there, but the Canucks, obviously, this is not the only move they're going to make. I'm not saying that they're going to make other moves today, Drew, but this Canucks team is rebuilding. I mean, Elias Pettersson just won the Calder Trophy. Brock Besser, you know, excellent rookie.
But to your point. Two
years ago. This past year was his second year. But what I'm saying is, you know, Quinn Hughes, he's a guy that could be, you know, a Calder Trophy candidate for next year. But the point is, I mean, JT Miller is not a guy that's going to put them over the top.
Well, if they're in the midst of a rebuild, as you just said, and I totally agree with, how can you even consider trading your first-round pick for JT Miller?
No, I agree. It's a very steep price to pay.
It's a huge price to pay.
Not only that, it doesn't make any... Like, Drew, to your point, why would you do it? Like, and it's funny because I spoke about it earlier, the idea that you're not trying to mortgage the future for current success.
Yeah.
I mean... Look, you're not in the Rangers situation where getting a Kaapo Kakko all of a sudden elevates what you're doing. It's like, kind of like with the Jets when they moved up to get Line A. You know, you have that opportunity. Suddenly, you're
franchise-defining move.
Right, you're not going to have a player who's going to come in and inject your roster with something that's going to be like, well, now we're a contender. Mm-hmm. That's not the case. So the whole point is you have to. I mean, the fan base has to be. I mean, look, we understand what fans are, but the reality is, they're pragmatic enough in that instance to know that you're not one player away. And trading away first-round picks, I just don't understand it.
We should mention, Dave, that JT Miller has 4 years left on his contract.
Still,
so, I mean, no. I'm just saying. I mean, you're not getting a guy who's got 1 year left.
Right.
So, I mean...
You are getting some certainty, and you expect that, you know, towards the end of his contract, you know, in years 3 and 4, maybe you're back to being a playoff team, and he's going to help you at that point.
Well, that's what's it. And just put yourself in Jim Benning's shoes. I realize that Benning's pretty unpopular right now in Vancouver, and, you know, Vasily Podkolzin wasn't necessarily the most popular pick.
Well, but you take Podkolzin, and he's the kind of guy who's got a ton of skill, and some draft experts had him ranked top 5, top 6, but he was
third overall back in September.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
He's got 2 years left on his deal in the KHL, so you know you're not going to see him for at least 2 more years. So what does JT Miller help you do next year? He doesn't help you become a playoff team.
Well, no, but it goes back to what we were talking about before. I mean, you're not making this trade necessarily. Like, obviously, JT Miller comes in, and he's a veteran player, and he's a guy that I probably would pencil in on the second line or third line. I'm not arguing with you. I already mentioned.
Yeah.
I think
it was a bad trade.
Yes, it was. Well, I don't know if I would call it a bad trade, but I think they gave up too much. Let's just leave it at that. Because I don't want to be the judge about, you know, if it was a good trade or bad trade.
Okay,
here.
Well, I'll be the judge, and I'll say it's a bad trade.
Sure, but I wouldn't say it was a good trade. I'll put it that way, Drew. But when you're talking about, you know, Miller, I think you have to look at it. You have to keep in mind that he's got 3 years. Pardon me, 4 years left. On the contract, you're not signing him just to get, you know, one or 2 years. So the point is, I mean, I I'm looking at it from the Canucks' perspective because I don't really think there's a point in looking at it from Tampa Bay's perspective.
If Tampa Bay gets that offer, they can't say enough.
No, but what I mean, Drew, is that they obviously dumped salary here. I mean, 4 years left at $5.2 million. We know that the Lightning have players to sign, right? Hello, Braden Point.
If Vancouver calls Tampa Bay up and says, we'll give you a fifth-round pick and take JT Miller's salary, Tampa Bay probably has to consider it.
I don't know about round, but maybe third.
Okay, fine. They gave him a first and a third.
No, and again...
amazing.
I'm with you, and I think Dave agrees. It looks like they gave up too much. No, they did give up too much here. Vancouver's a team that they know they're rebuilding. So, I mean, you do have to have some veteran players to play with guys like Pettersson and with Besser and, you know, Quinn Hughes on the back end. I mean, Vancouver, I think everyone would be surprised if Vancouver made the playoffs this year.
Right. So why acquire JT Miller? How does it help you? I mean, and we're in agreement, Ezzy, and we can talk circles about this all day long, but we're in agreement that it's a pretty inexplicable trade by Jim Benning there.
And I mentioned earlier there are, you know, rumors out there, and you can believe them or you can choose to not believe them, that Vancouver is possibly going to move a forward out. So I think it makes more sense if Vancouver is going to move. For example, a Jake Virtanen is a guy that you hear might be moving out of Vancouver, possibly for a guy like Tyson Barrie. So that's all I'm saying. Again, I'm not justifying the trade. I'm just trying to give an explanation maybe why Jim Benning made that trade.
Which
I guess is an explanation.
The last player for player trade that has occurred, or player related trade that has occurred today, saw a 1-for-1 deal. The New Jersey Devils have acquired John Hayden from the Chicago Blackhawks in exchange for former Brandon Wheat King John Quenneville.
Joel's nephew, right?
I think that is the case. Yeah, a straight 1-for-1 deal there. Hayden for Quenneville, two guys that have sort of underperformed the expectations in both city. Maybe it's one of those moves where each guy gets a fresh start in a new city.
Yeah, John Hayden's a guy that played about half the season last year for the Blackhawks, and Quenneville's obviously a guy that's, you know, kind of yo-yoed back and forth between the American Hockey League and the NHL. Hayden's got you know, obviously a bit of offensive upside. He's obviously shown it more at the American Hockey League level, but these are kind of fourth line guys at the NHL level, bottom six forward. So, as you mentioned, you know, kind of an opportunity for both of these players to maybe get a little bit more ice time in on their new respective teams.
Third round of the NHL draft is quickly coming to an end. The New Jersey Devils took a 5-minute timeout, which really shouldn't be allowed as far as I'm concerned. And then they traded the pick to the Washington Capitals.
Maybe Ray Shiro, you know, had to go get a snack or something.
Yeah, he might have been getting a little peckish. I know I'm getting a little peckish, so why don't we head to break when we
come
back?
Have a cookie, Drew.
I'm going to have a cookie. We got lots to talk about. It's been a chaotic week. More Jets draft picks coming up as we're getting close to the start of the fourth round. You're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Day 2 coverage of the 2019 NHL Draft.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday afternoon, welcome back to Day 2 coverage of the 2019 NHL Draft. Drew Mandel, Dave Manouk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. Here we are, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, where you're listening live to TSN Radio 1290. The fourth round is now underway. The Jets, of course, did not have a third round selection. The fourth round pick will be coming up in about, let's say, 19 or so picks. So a little bit of time left for the Jets to make their fourth round selection. We'll bring it to you, of course, here live on TSN 1290. Earlier this week, Dave Manouk, a large signing with the San Jose Sharks, agreeing to an 8-year contract extension with Erik Karlsson. 8 years, $92 million for Karlsson. He gets Drew Doughty money, as it were, an $11.5 million cap hit. The Sharks took a risk in acquiring him with only 1 year left on his deal. That risk paid off in that he agreed to that 8-year extension. Your thoughts on this deal when it happened earlier this week? I mean, there was some injury concerns there with Erik Karlsson, but when healthy, he still seems like the most dynamic defenseman in the game.
Yeah, and I think that's obviously what San Jose was banking on, no pun intended, that he would be a healthy player for them for the majority of the time that they've signed him to. I mean, to me, for a guy with his dynamic play, I mean, it does make a lot of sense. But then when you factor in how much money they're paying him and the term, like, I don't care, again, if it's a short-term deal and you're throwing a lot of money at this guy, that's fine. Because for the San Jose Sharks, you really, with the veterans that they have, they obviously have some good young players, but with the veterans they have, especially if they acquire Marlowe, they're an older team that's in win-now mode. Mm-hmm. And so from their perspective, at least my perspective of their perspective, you know, having a guy like Carlson wrapping up that much money and with questionable health moving forward, it's a risk. There's a big risk attributed to it.
Yeah, and San Jose, Dave, has to be one of the most exciting teams to be watching right now, or we should say one of the most interesting teams to be watching right now, in addition to, you know, the Winnipeg Jets and the Toronto Maple Leafs, because we talked about Patrick Marleau last segment. We also talked to John Mattis about Patrick Marleau. The idea is that Marleau's going to sign the one-year contract, but when you look at the list of UFAs mm-hmm. that the San Jose Sharks have, you're talking about, obviously, Joe Pavelski's the big one, Joe Thornton, Timo Meier yeah. is coming off of a career year.
He's RFA, for the record, though.
Oh, sorry, pardon me. So he's RFA, of course.
Gustav Nyquist, who they acquired from Detroit at the trade deadline
Jonas
last Donskoy, season.
Jonas Donskoy, who came in. But back to Erik Karlsson and the big contract. We talked about this. Carlson was basically a point-a-game defenseman for the Sharks on one groin, and he almost got the Sharks into the Stanley Cup final. Mm-hmm. I mean, not just him. Obviously, Brent Burns was terrific, but what I'm saying is he almost was part of that team that got to the Stanley Cup final. So Carlson on one groin I thought was really good, and I think the knock on Carlson right now, you mentioned the injuries, but what you hear is that, okay, well, you're paying for a guy's past production, and he's no longer a 75 to 80 point defenseman. Well, I'll still take a 60 to 65 point defenseman, because last time I checked, Drew, 60 or 65 points is still going to put you among the top 10 offensive defensemen in the league, right?
So behind probably his teammate, Brent Burns.
Well, yeah, and Brent, I mean, obviously, you know, Carlson, I don't think, you know, his career high, I believe, was 82. I don't, maybe he does hit it, but I don't think that all of a sudden Carlson, because he's had some injuries, is going to be a 45 or 50 point defenseman. I mean, look what he did this past year. I mean, this past year he had all types of injuries, and he was, I believe, close to a point a game.
45 points in 53 games played, so, and a lot of those games were played while hobbled.
Well, and when you talk about Carlson, I don't care what anybody says, Carlson is still a top 10, if not top 5 defenseman when he's fully healthy, and he's still young. It's not like you just gave a 32-year-old Erik Karlsson an 8-year contract. So was it a little bit too much money? Was it too many years? Sure, but you got to think that Erik Karlsson looks at, you know, this is the last opportunity for him to sign this big contract. We've talked about this before. 27, 28, 29 years old. Yeah. That's when you sign your big contract nowadays in the NHL.
I would expect the Sharks are not going to like this contract when he's 35, 36, 37.
Right. But you're a win now team, because you don't bring back Patrick Marleau. You don't bring back, you know, Joe Thornton, Joe Pavelski. You know, you don't bring back these veterans. And, you know, the Sharks, as I mentioned, they were a game away from going to the Stanley Cup final. And, you know, I like their chances in the Stanley Cup final against the Bruins. So, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, the Sharks' window is closed. Well, if they are able, I kind of joked. I said they're going to bring the band back together or get the band back together. I mean, if you bring back Marleau, now you've got Marleau, and, you know, we know that, you know, you're possibly going to have to move out a contract to afford, you know, all these UFAs and RFAs you have to sign. But the point is, you're not necessarily signing Erik Karlsson for year 5, 6, 7, 8. You're signing him for the next 3 or 4 years.
You're signing him for the next 3 or 4 years, and right. You're going to hold your nose in 5, 6, 7, 8 and hope that you have an influx of young, cheap players that can sort of offset what he's getting paid, probably when it's going to be an overpayment. I mean, that's the reality.
I wonder if Evander Kane is a guy that the Sharks move out. I mean, he wasn't good in the playoffs. I mean, if anybody watched the playoffs, Evander Kane, especially against the Blues, he wasn't a big factor. I forget how many points he had. He might have only had 1 or 2 points in that series, and you're looking at his contract, 6 more years at $7
million. He had 8 points in 20 games in the playoffs, and he's got a modified no-trade clause, so he can be moved, but,
You mentioned 8 points in 20 games, but I don't think he had many in that third round.
No, he wasn't as impactful as you would want a guy getting paid $7 million on a team now that has got issues, I guess, as it relates to the salary cap to deal with.
And I really think, similar to, I have been using a lot of basketball analogies, it seems like, but I think if you're the San Jose Sharks and Carlson ends up being part of a team that brings you that Stanley Cup that has eluded you for this many years.
Yeah.
I think that you're willing to eat. You know, I mean, I suspect the fans won't be calling for Doug Wilson's head if you know, later on down the line, yeah, they have a Stanley Cup a banner on their hanging.
And I don't mean to pick on Evander Kane here, Dave. He had one assist in six games against the Blues.
When they needed him the most.
Well, that's a $7 million a year player, and he didn't show up.
And
I realize he had some personal things, and you know, we want to mention that what happened with his wife and their child and everything like that. It's horrible. You never want to see that. But I'm just saying, I mean, for a guy that you're paying $7 million a year, point in six games in the Western Conference Final, that's not going to cut it.
Well, you know, if you're the Sharks, I mean, the fact you got to the Western Conference Final, I mean, you almost have to put a little bit of an asterisk next to it. Because they really shouldn't have. They should have lost to Vegas.
To Vegas, of course.
They should have lost to Vegas. They should have been second round and out. And you wonder if they're second round and out, does that change their perspective on what they do with regard to Erik Karlsson? Probably not. Probably not. They probably still pay Karlsson the same amount of money and say, hey, look, this guy did everything he could for us on one leg. But you wonder that had Vegas not blown that 4-goal lead late in the third period of Game 7, does that change how San Jose approaches the Erik Karlsson situation? Obviously, you can't go back in time and figure that out, but it is an interesting food for thought, I would say.
No, I agree, and that's why I really think San Jose is one of the most interesting teams to watch. And I mentioned the Jets, and I mentioned the Leafs, and the Rangers, obviously, trading for Jacob Trouba, getting Kaapo Kakko second overall. I mean, there's a lot of teams where you're watching them and you're saying, well, what other moves are to come? Because we know that there's possibly another move coming with the Jets and possibly with the Leafs, but the Sharks, how do you get all these guys under contract? Because you got to think, Drew, Timo Meier is maybe a $6 or $7 million a year guy.
Mm-hmm. They're gonna have some interesting questions to answer over the next couple of weeks. When we come back, Josh Cooper is going to join us from the draft in Vancouver. The Jets are about 13 picks away, so it's getting close to the Jets making their fourth round selection. We'll bring that to you as well. You're listening to day two coverage of the 2019 NHL Draft. We are the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to 2019 second day coverage. I'm going to keep saying second round, but I mean second day coverage of the 2019 NHL Draft. Drew Mundell, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. The Jets, not having had a third round pick, have been off the clock for a while. They're getting closer to being on. About eight picks away, the Jets going to pick at number 113. That is the 20th pick in this fourth round. They're, like I said, about eight picks away. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us. You can also reach us via text message. Send your text to 1290. These standard messaging rates do apply. Going to bring you the Jets' fourth round selection just as soon as we possibly can when it is ready, and hopefully that individual will join us on the program as well.
Yeah, it's probably going to be about 15 minutes from now. Chicago just took Michael Tepley at 105th overall.
Ezzy, what can you tell us about Michael?
Yeah, Ezzy's going to break him down in detail coming up momentarily.
I can tell you he's a left winger.
There you go.
Wow, Ezzy's reading is perfect.
Your reading comprehension is wonderful there, Ezzy.
He might be Czech. I remember reading a scouting report. He might be Czech. Yeah. I'll have to confirm that.
It might be McCall.
Ezzy doesn't need any hoot reading. I can tell you that much.
Doesn't need any hoot reading. Let's talk about all the people who've been reading rumors about Nikolaj Ehlers and his future with the Winnipeg Jets.
Tepley is Czech.
Tepley is Czech. Yeah. There you go.
Just checking in, Drew.
There, clever.
Whoa. That was mine. And I'm sure nobody else has ever used it.
Shout out to Michael Frolik.
Like everyone who said Winnipeg last night.
I may have been the first, Drew.
You may have been the first, and then it quickly got ground into the into the dust very quickly.
Yeah.
And
I'm pretty sure I heard Winnipeg like 5 years ago.
Oh, yeah. There's no question. I say I'm the first, I mean the first used it last night.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'm not claiming intellectual credit on that, although someone did say, you should delete your tweet and put that on a T-shirt because it's going to be used. And then, of course, our boy Scott Billick posted a funny picture where he took the Winnipeg sign, put a big F on there, and said it's not his heat map, but it's a pretty good representation. Of course, he didn't credit me, so thanks, Scott.
Thank you for that breakdown of the Winnipeg thing. I don't think anybody, may God have mercy on your soul for wasting the airtime on that.
And we have a new member of the all-food team, Florida Panthers, taking Carter Berger, 106th overall from the Victoria Grizzlies of the BCHL. He's a left-shot defenseman. So welcome to the all-food team, Carter Berger.
Well, what an honor. And it's now, you know, you'd think that the honor would be being selected by the Florida Panthers. It's not. It was being named to the all-food team. The Jets about five picks or so away from making their fourth-round selection. As I was trying to get to, Nikolaj Ehlers, there was a lot of talk, a lot written, a lot of ink spilled about Nikolaj Ehlers potentially being on the trade block. I think last week on the show I said I don't understand it. 7 days later, I still don't understand it.
Because it makes no sense.
Well, there you go. So, you know, tell me why, you know, anybody can justifiably think that Nikolaj Ehlers, sure the Jets need cap space, but why would Ehlers be the guy to be moved out?
You're
shrugging your shoulders.
I don't understand it. He's one of the most dynamic forwards. He's on a contract you're going to love for years to come. He obviously had a bit of a down year due to injury this season, but I mean, like, he's dynamic. He moves the puck like almost nobody on this team in terms of puck possession. I mean, it's Nikolaj Ehlers. Is just a phenomenal hockey player. I mean, are there flaws to his game? Of course, but there aren't very many perfect players aside from, like, the Sidney Crosbys of the world. So a lot of players have warts to their game. So does Nikolaj Ehlers have some warts to his game? Absolutely. Did Nikolaj Ehlers not have a tremendous amount of success putting the puck in the back of the net or facilitating that in the playoffs? Yeah, of course. But you know what? He's a young player. To me, and I've seen some people say this, you don't sell low on a guy like this because that's what you're doing at this point. So why would you do that from a position of strength with a contract you're going to, again, he's going to put up 30, 35 goals for the next few years for this team. And he's, I mean, again, thinking from cohesion, because we always hear about that for this Jets team, I mean, I'm not saying that you guys are best friends, and, you know, it was interesting because Mark Scheifele is doing a camp in Winnipeg, and he was talked about how Jacob Trouba is one of his best friends, but you understand this is a business. But at the same time, you don't necessarily go out of your way to trade guys who are interconnected, and obviously Patrick Laine, a guy that is looking, the Jets are probably looking to sign him long term. Him and Nikolaj Ehlers are extraordinarily close. So to me, Ehlers just doesn't make a lot of sense. And I get the fact that you want to acquire some D, but I just don't think he's that player that you're going to want to move out.
Dave, look, he's 23 years old. He's already had three 20 goal seasons, and you mentioned last year he missed, I think it was 20 games.
Yeah,
right.
He still had 21 goals.
Well. Right, but three 20-goal seasons, he's already got, you know, a couple of 60-point seasons. I agree. I mean, this is a guy that you can safely pencil in 25 to 35 goals and, you know, somewhere around, you know, 60 to 70 points. I think he might even get, you know, more than that. He might be a 75, 80-point guy. Yeah, I mean, you forget he's 23 years old, and Dave nailed it. I mean, it's the contract. The Ehlers contract, to me, similar to the Scheifele contract.
That's right.
You could argue these guys are $8, $9 million a year players, more so Scheifele than Ehlers, but certainly Ehlers, you could argue that based on comparables, you know, $7.5 million, like Ehlers, like, yeah,
based on what Kevin Hayes just got, like, and
if anybody is bringing up, you know, Ehlers not getting any points in the playoffs, well, if you actually watched him play, clearly, you know, he was suffering, you know, an injury.
Yeah. I mean, with a broken leg in his last game.
Well, that's obvious, and so, I mean, you basically just don't even factor that in, right? So you're talking about last year during the regular season, like you mentioned, misses 20 games, he still gets 21 goals, probably would have hit 30. So I understand that the Jets need to find room for Connor and Lion A and Andrew Kopp and, you know, other players, but to me it makes a lot more sense to possibly buy out Dmitry Kulikov or maybe move a guy like Matty Perreault. Again, you know, Dave mentioned that, you know, a guy like Trouba had the relationship with Scheifele and other players. And Matty Perreault, guys, we know, is one of the most popular guys in that Jets dressing room. But when you look at Perreault's contract, 2 years left, $4 million, right? 2 years left, or is it 3 years?
2 years left.
2 years left. And so that makes a lot more sense than moving a guy like Nick Ehlers. I just think, you know, unless you really nail the trade, and you either, Ken Weeb mentioned this on the afternoon ride yesterday, either you're trading Ehlers to get a top-pairing right-side defenseman, or you're trading Ehlers for a second-line center. And we know how hard those types of one-for-one or even maybe like a two-for-two trade is to consummate, right? So I think the likelihood of Ehlers being traded is low. And, you know, if I'm the GM of the Jets, which obviously I'm not.
And the fans are thankful for that.
I really like Ehlers. Dave mentioned, you know, the possession numbers, the skating. I mean, Ehlers is a top-five skater in the league. His speed is incredible.
And it's actually funny to me because he never really gets mentioned in that regard, which is interesting, right? Like, you talk about, and again, it doesn't really make a difference, but like fastest skater events at All-Star games. Nikolaj Ehlers, I got to put him up against, like, as he just said, anybody in the NHL. Exception, obviously, maybe Connor McDavid.
I think think selfishly too, Dave, I don't want Ehlers to be traded because he might be, for me, the player that is the most exciting to watch. Like, he's a pleasure to watch. I realize that, you know, sometimes, you know, you wish Ehlers would shoot more or he'd score more goals or he'd maybe go to the net a little bit more. But watching Ehlers skate, I mean, it's effortless. The guy has, and he's such a great stick handler and a goal scorer. So, selfishly, I almost don't want Ehlers to be traded for that reason.
Ehlers is the type of player who fans kind of get out of their seats a little bit when he's got that puck.
When he builds up that speed coming out of the blue line or heading into the neutral zone.
It reminds you of Paul Coffey. Like, it really does. Or Scott Niedermayer.
I know what you're saying.
I mean, the type of speed and his skating, I mean, it's incredible. I already mentioned that, but this guy, he was a 9th overall pick.
It just never made any sense. I mean, you look at the Jets team, you know, you want players who have cost certainty. And Ehlers gives them cost certainty.
Right.
And he's not what I would describe as overpaid. Because if Ehlers was, you know, was hitting the market right now, that is, you know, what he would get.
If Kevin Hayes is getting, what was Kevin Hayes getting?
Over 7.125, something like that.
$50 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, look at Shively's contract when you compare that to what Kevin Hayes is getting.
Yeah.
Look at Ehlers' contract. These are contracts that Jets fans are going to be very happy that they have when you have to sign Kyle Connor, when you have to sign Patrick Laine, and again, eventually there'll be more players that you're going to be trying to bring into the fold. So team-friendly contracts like that, I think, are very necessary.
Equal time, just, you know, as we're saying, who wants to trade him? Andre chimed in on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Ehlers is a playoff flop. We want the cup, not regular season trophy. He has to go. So, Andre, we will...
He's being sarcastic, isn't he?
No, I don't believe he is. He's being 100% serious, and we'll beg to differ. Respectable gentleman.
He was injured during the playoffs this year. I mean, come on. Do I have to repeat myself here?
Well, he was also not very good against 2 years ago when they went to the Western Conference Final. We know he's still looking for a goal in the playoffs. So, I mean, you know, he needs to improve.
He might not have scored a goal, but he was still pretty good.
He needs to improve his playoffs.
He could have easily had a few goals.
He needs to improve his playoffs. I don't think anybody's disputing that, but I still don't think that he's worth throwing the baby out with the bathwater at that point in time. Winnipeg Jets a couple picks away now, three picks away from making their fourth round selection. The Jets, in case you missed it, in case you're just joining us, in the second round, at number 51 overall, the Jets selected Simon Lundmark, a defenseman from Sweden, who's about 6 foot. What was he? About 6 foot two.
Yeah, 6 foot 1, 6 foot two.
Six foot one, 6 foot two. About just under 200 pounds. Right shot defenseman. And of course, yesterday in the first round of the NHL draft, the Jets selected Ville Heinola, a first-round pick from Finland, a left-side defenseman who can play both sides. So the Jets so far loading up on defensemen with the NHL draft. The New York Rangers are on the clock. The Winnipeg Jets up right after the Rangers as we're waiting for the Jets to make their selection.
Yeah, and, you know, going back to, you know, our conversation with Simon Lundmark, you know, a really well-spoken kid. Obviously, we only talked to him, Dave, for about, you know, 5 minutes, and you can go to legalcurve.com and hear that chat. That's obviously cheap plug number 5.
And I haven't even made one of them yet. You've made 4 and Drew's made 1.
The Jets are on the clock, so that's what producer Chris Curry is mouthing to us here. So the Jets moments away from making their fourth round selection, and of course the Jets have two picks in the fifth round, and then that's it, barring any other trades.
The Rangers just took defenseman Hunter Skinner out of the USHL, so we're going to get the Jets pick momentarily here.
The Jets have selected from Finland. They go back to Scandinavia. A big centerman, 6'4", 200 pounds, from the junior team of Jokerit, selected Henri Nikkanen. So again, the Jets, their fourth round selection, number 113 overall, Henri Nikkanen. We'll get the pronunciation from him momentarily if he's able to join us here.
You,
no, they're not making it easy. 6'4", 200 pounds.
I told you it would
defenseman.
Be a forward. I mean, you thought they were going to go defenseman.
No,
Drew,
I
you
said
don't,
the
you don't know what
take...
you're talking about.
Well,
here.
Do I need to send my Winnipeg one out again?
No, but again, I guess it is the Jets loving Scandinavia so far.
The Jets will never take a North American player again.
I don't think that's going to be the case. But Henri Nikkanen, 6'4", 200 pounds, a very large centerman in terms of height. Obviously, we will hear more from him.
Has strong vision and playmaking skills that he can build upon. That's from Future Considerations. And then Hockey Prospect says he is able to take advantage of his size when battling for pucks along the boards or trying to gain position in the slot.
He had an injury-riddled year this past season. He's only played 14 games for the junior team and 9 games in the Liga for Jokerit. In international play, he performed well at the Hlinka Gretzky Cup in August and the Five Nations Tournament in November. But in April and in February, he missed those Five Nations. So this is a guy who obviously had a bit of an injury-riddled year. Maybe that explains why he dropped a little bit in the draft. According to HockeyProspects.com, they have him ranked as their 86th prospect. So obviously the Jets, maybe he fell because of his injuries, but I mean, who knows what the draft boards look like at this point in time. You know, sort of across the board, average in hockey sense, average in compete level, average in skill, and average in skating. So Henry Nikkanen, the Jets' fourth round selection here at the 2019 NHL draft.
Yeah, Drew, and you mentioned that he was ranked 86th by Hockey Prospect. Dauber Prospects, our good friend Cam Robinson, they actually had him ranked 58th overall, and I pulled up from our good friend Cam Robinson here something about Henry Nikkanen. His season, as you mentioned, Drew, was ruined by an injury that kept him out for a big stretch in the middle of the season. Nikkanen continues to be an intriguing prospect due to his set of desirable tools. We mentioned he's 6'2" and a center, and he's got really good skating and hockey IQ. You obviously hear that about a lot of players, but you know, another prospect that we're going to find out a lot about here in the next few minutes, and hopefully get him on the show.
He is not at the draft, so he's not in Vancouver. We will try and get him on the phone if we can at some point in the next the course of however many hours. Yeah, we'll call Finland. We'll try and get a hold of him to see if he's able to join us.
Finland right now.
Well, it's two. You know what, Dave? I don't know what time. It's probably about 11:30 p.m. in Finland. I'm guessing they're about 9 hours ahead of us, but I think he's probably waiting to see if his name was called. 10:30, there you go. So 8 hours ahead. So I can assure you he was probably waiting for the call from an NHL team to say that he'd been selected at the NHL draft. So a very exciting day for Henry Nikkanen, and we'll try and bring him on the program with you.
Yeah, and then, you know, something else here from future considerations. I don't know if Dave just read this, but, you know, a lot happening here, but Nikkanen has strong vision and playmaking skills that he can build upon. So it seems like he's a guy that, you know, a two-way centerman with some offensive upside, Drew. And, you know, we've mentioned a couple times that he was injured, but a guy that, you know, had a little bit of success this past season playing in the Finnish league. But again, you know, don't know a lot about him yet, but you know, we can tell you that much, that he's a big center that it looks like might have fallen a little bit to the Jets. When you look at where they had him at Dauber Prospects and where they had him at Hockey Prospects, it looked like he was going to be a third rounder, but he falls to the Jets in the fourth round.
Exactly right. So again, to recap what the Jets have done so far this afternoon, they selected in the second round Simon Lundmark, a defenseman out of Sweden, with their second round selection. And with their fourth round pick, the Jets have selected Henry Nikkanen, a 6'4", 200-pound center out of Finland. So the Jets are turning into Team Scandinavia right now. It's reminiscent of the days of General Manager Mike Smith, Jets 1.0, when everybody on the team was Russian. But I guess that I think Jets fans are a little bit more comfortable with Scandinavia than they necessarily would be back in the heyday of Mike Smith.
Yeah, shout out to Sergei Bouton.
Exactly. And Igor Ulanov and Evgeny
Davidov
was the guy who played for the Panthers. Exactly right.
Habib Bulin.
Habib Bulin turned out to be okay. Nobody had a problem with Nikolai Habib Bulin. In any event, we shall see what's going to happen. But we're in agreement, going back to the conversation we were having about Nikolai Ehlers, that probably isn't a decision that we're expecting to occur. Seems like the trades are beginning to maybe dry up a little bit. Perhaps they'll get a little busier.
You want to have Josh Cooper on here?
Sure. Why don't we have Josh Cooper on?
Like, go to break and then bring him on?
Yeah, we have a break we can hit to, Chris. You're giving us the nod. So Chris Curry says, yes, we can. We'll bring in Josh Cooper. He's in Vancouver. We'll try and bring Henry Nikkanen if we're able to get him on the phone, as he is not at the draft. Jets have two picks coming up in the fifth round. So much more to come. You're listening to TSN 1290. We are the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Day 2 coverage of the NHL draft.